Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. Joe Burrow is playing football tonight. The Cincinnati Bengals will open the preseason hosting the Detroit Lions Thursday at 7 p.m. Burrow, Ja'Marr Chase, T. Higgins, and Dexter Lawrence will see limited action in tonight's contest. It's the first of three preseason games for the Bengals. Cincinnati's going to host Chicago next Saturday. The Bears are going to host the Browns this coming Saturday in the preseason opener for both squads. Browns head coach Todd Monken says Deshaun Watson's going to get the start. Shedeur Sanders gets the nod next Saturday against the Buffalo Bills. You can hear Browns preseason football on the Fan with coverage this Saturday at 1 o'clock. In baseball last night, Guardians beat the Tigers 6-4 in Detroit. Series rubber match today at 1:10. The White Sox blank the Reds in Chicago 5-0. Redlegs can win the series today at 2:10. And in the minors, the Clippers smash the Storm Chasers 15-7 last night at Huntington Park. This update is sponsored by Roosters. Roosters is giving away 12 ultimate Buckeye experiences, tickets, sideline passes, and trips to a Buckeye first-round postseason game. Register today at roosterswings.com.
Your morning just got more interesting. Distilled and barrel-picked for your listening pleasure. Bo Bishop, a local sports media legend. What William T. Sherman was to the Union Army, he is to Northern College football. A husband, a father, and middling youth sports coach. He's friends with Central Ohio sporting royalty.
I'm talking to Ohio State Athletic Director Ross Bjorken. Coach Day walking on with us right now. Good to see you, buddy.
Good buddy, Austin Ward.
My good buddy, Tim May, the Tim May Show.
The great Doug Lamery is joining us.
Hi, everybody. Dom Tabari here.
Well, Reese came in, and he handed me papers.
Yeah,
and then,
it's a rundown.
And then he said, you see that button? That's the only button you need to worry about. Don't touch. There's 8,000 buttons in front of me. Oh, I didn't know what he was talking about.
The one that says on.
We blew the budget on this imaging, and only two guys answered our ad on Craigslist. Ryan Baker and Eric Reeser. Act accordingly. You're now listening to Bishop and Friends.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for over 75 years.
All right, let's do it live on a Thursday edition of the program. Bo and the boys with you for the next three. Is this Buckeye defense up to the task? We'll get into that coming up in 27 minutes from now. 10 o'clock, we'll open up that mailbag. A lot of good ones out of all of you. Mr. Feinbaum joins at 10:30, as is customary, on a Thursday at 11 o'clock. It's Deshaun Watson for now. We'll see how all of that works. One preseason game for Deshaun, one for Shedeur. As I've said this entire time, pay attention to next Thursday's joint practice in Cleveland. That will give you a little bit of a lead on perhaps what Todd Monken is thinking. And by the way, he just tells you what he's thinking, so just actually listen to him, and you'll probably get the answers on all of that. At 11:30, Nate Davis, USA Today. Full slate of preseason football kicks off tonight, including the Bengals and the Steelers. So what to look for in all of that. Good to have football back in a big, big way with the preseason slate on the schedule for tonight. This was my first year covering Florida State, 2001. There was a five-star cornerback who out of Diamond Bar, California, named Dominic Robinson. And he idolized Deion Sanders, idolized him, wore number two, not only wore number two, but had all of this, mimicked everything from the headband to the sweat towel to the wristbands and the gloves undone and the shoes and the socks and all of it. Everything that Deion did, Dominic Robinson did. And Dominic Robinson was a Southern California kid, and he went to Florida State. And at that time, Florida State was a preeminent program in the country. They'd play in three straight national championship games, winning one, and were kind of the standard at that point of all of college football. And he got in there, and he was part of a pretty loaded recruiting class. And one of the things that he asked of Florida State was that he would be able to wear number two. He wanted to wear number two at Florida State like Deion Sanders. And so when he gets to FSU, I want to say initially they gave him 12. I think it was 12 right away. They didn't give him two right away. But the story went that Bobby Bowden wanted Deion to get a look at him. And then Dominic Robinson was going to ask Deion Sanders if he could wear number two at Florida State. And so I'll never forget the practice when Deion showed up and watched practice and took it all in. So it was a big deal. Anytime Deion came back to Tallahassee, it was a pretty big deal. And he came back and he watched practice and then he left. And I remember talking to Bobby, because in those days, Bowden would talk after every single practice. He would talk. He would ride his little golf cart over and he'd talk after every practice. Practices were pretty wide open in those days. You could watch all of them. Any practice you wanted, you could watch. And we would, he came over and we asked him about the number. And he gave, in classic Bobby Bowden way, kind of a little smirk, and said he's going to stick with the number he's got, was the idea. And so what I inferred from that is Dion got a look at Dominic and didn't think he was worthy of unretiring number two. These, by the way, his son, Deuce Robinson, was a first-team All-ACC receiver at Florida State now, which tells you a little bit how old I am, I guess, that his kid is now a wide receiver at Florida State now after starting his career at USC. There's others example of this. You guys have one here that's really famous, and that is Big Cat. Big Cat comes to Ohio State in the late 90s and asks Archie if he can wear 45, and Archie acquiesced and said, Yeah, you can wear it. You can wear 45. There was another one that I've told the story before about Ernie Sims, who was the number one recruit in the country out of Florida State and out of Tallahassee, and was between Florida State, Auburn, and Georgia, and asked all of the schools if he could wear number 34. Number 34 was retired at Florida State for Ron Sellers, retired at Auburn for a guy named Vincent Bo Jackson, and retired at Georgia for a guy named Herschel Walker. All three schools said that he could wear it. He ended up going to Florida State, which probably speaks to how good Ernie is. So what's in a number? Well, a lot. A lot isn't a number. And I've had the stance for a while now, probably a decade plus, and I will give full marks or partial marks actually to Brady Hoke, and I will give some marks to Clemson for this, which I know is going to make me very popular for the next 60 seconds around here. But I think what they did in the honoring of retired numbers, I think it's ridiculous that a quarterback wore 98, but if you want to wear 98 for Tom Harmon, then God bless you. And put a little jersey patch on it that says Tom Harmon on it. And my opinion on Clemson did the same thing actually with Deshaun Watson, where he got to wear number 4. That was retired at Clemson. I want to say for Steve Fuller, I believe it was a quarterback off the top of my head. I believe that's who wore it. And so he had a little patch on his jersey that said his name and that he was the guy who wore it. Did I get that right? Okay. So, I think that's the best way. I think it's pretty silly that for the better part of 100 years, no one has worn a single digit and no one will ever wear a single digit for the New York Yankees again. I think that's nuts. It's absolutely nuts. Do you think there are little kids out here who know who Joe DiMaggio is? But what if you issued number 5 and you put DiMaggio 5 on it, and then a kid buys a number 5 jersey and all of a sudden they go, well, Dad, who's Joe DiMaggio? Well, he had a 56-game hit streak. He was married to Marilyn Monroe, kind of lived a pretty much glamorous life. That's a guy. That's who that was. And now you get a little history lesson. So that's always been my approach to it, is that. I think they should do that here. The one thing about the Ohio State numbers that are retired, it's an odd one. There aren't any numbers that by today's standards kids would think are particularly cool. I mean, it's 22, 27, 31, 40, 45, 47, 99. Those are the retireds. So no one's clamoring for those. Those aren't single digits, I guess, right? The kids want the single digits. They want the teens. 22 has a little bit of juice to it, but it's not one that I see some kids saying, well, I'm not coming here unless I get to wear number 22. So why are we talking about all this? Well, I'm going to tell you why. This is stupefying to me. This morning, I woke up to this news. An attorney representing Washington Commanders quarterback Jaden Daniels has informed LSU that it can no longer use his name, image, and likeness, according to an August 5th letter sent to Tigers athletic director. At the center of the dispute, according to the statement from Daniels' spokesperson to ESPN, is that the Tigers are allowing sophomore cornerback DJ Pickett to wear number 5 that Daniels wore when he became LSU's third Heisman winner in 2023. While Daniels' jersey hasn't been retired by the Tigers, it's the first time a player has worn 5 since he left the program for the NFL, which is 3 years ago. This is a statement. This isn't like the Onion. This is real. The Daniels family is deeply disappointed and feels profoundly disrespected by LSU's decision to give Jaden's number to another player. Jaden and his family had every reason to believe that his number would remain in a meaningful part of LSU's legacy and would be honored and protected in its recognition of his extraordinary contributions to the university. Turns out this Pickett guy was promised number 5 by the previous coaching staff during his recruitment. The guy in the middle of this now is Lane Kiffin, who told reporters on August 5th that Pickett was promised he could wear number 5, and so he issued it to him. Is there any scenario where Jaden Daniels doesn't come off absurdly petty in this? Absurdly so?
Not right now. Like, this is as silly. Reading this, like, it's crazy. Joe Burrow could do this, but not Jaden Daniels.
But he wouldn't.
Right.
He wouldn't do it.
And for
you
LSU,
give somebody 9? Give him 9. I don't think Joe would give 2 blanks.
Jaden had a remarkable season at LSU, but they didn't play any meaningful football. So while it was great, it was largely forgettable. Joe Burrow won the Heisman and then the national championship. Jaden comes off looking really, really bad in this, in my opinion. And for Lane Kiffin, jeez, I think he's doing the right thing, because you need DJ Pickett now. You do not need Jaden Daniels right now. And this was promised to him by somebody else. And if you're Lane, you're like, all right, I'm just going to keep this promise and I'm not going to worry about a guy who I don't know if they even feature a ton anyway.
So, Reese, your point about Jaden Daniels, and he won a Heisman. He had a great
season.
Season at LSU. His record in 2 years at LSU is 19-7. 20-7 if you include a Cheez-Its Bowl win. He also spent more time at Arizona State than he did LSU.
Yep.
And I'm pretty sure LSU has plenty of other players that they can put on the media guide. The Honey Badger, Justin Jefferson, Ja'Marr Chase, Joe Burrow, and that's just recently.
Mm-hmm.
There's plenty of other guys you can put on there. I don't understand this at all. It's crazy. And we've talked about this. Retiring numbers, it's got to go away.
It's got to.
Because you're going to run out of numbers.
Yes. Yeah, it's I've been on this for a decade. I just think it's silly to do it anymore. Like, just honor them, put them in the rafters, put them in a circle of honor, put them in their name and the number, all of it. I think Ohio State's doing it right now, like what they did with Troy, put the 10 up there, Troy Smith up there, by the way, put 75 up there, those type of things. But just keep issuing it. Keep issuing the number. And if you want to put some sort of a historical patch or badge on the jersey to say this is a number that was worn by this player, then I think that's really cool. If you disagree with that, that's fine too. Here's the other part of this. What would you think if you were the head coach of the Washington Commanders? It's training camp, guys. He was hurt most of last season after an incredible rookie year. There are shades of, and certainly fear there, that he could turn into another Robert Griffin III, right? Incredible rookie year that gets sidelined by injuries, and he's never the same. It's training camp, and you're worried about this nonsense? You're wearing about some cornerback wearing number 5? What are we doing? What are we doing? It's so silly. And I just, if I owned the Washington Commanders, I'd just be like, dude, where's your head, man? Like, where is your head that you're worried about utter nonsense like this? Plus, I believe there's one other thing, pretty big technicality here. I'm pretty sure that the statute of limitations on using name, image, and likeness of former players is 180 days. So I'm pretty sure that LSU owns all of Jaden Daniels' name, image, and likeness from his time at LSU. I don't think that there's a way that he can possibly sue them for anything on that front. So it just, there's no win for him in it. And it's just such a silly thing, which leads to another silly thing. Speaking of Deion Sanders, he did what? We'll get into that coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here on The
Fan. Has a secret radio station. It's called The Fan 2. You can listen to The Bob and Tom Show, Jim Rome, and Buckeye Stuff. Why do they pay me big money to whisper? The Fan 2 is on The Fan's HD2 channel and streaming on The Fan app. You're welcome. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a partly cloudy sky for the rest of the day. Watching for a chance of showers and a few thunderstorms to arrive toward the evening hours out of the west. Otherwise, it'll be a humid afternoon with highs in the mid-80s. Chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms overnight could be a localized downpour with lows around 70. For the day tomorrow, chance of showers and storms mainly in the morning, otherwise partly to mostly cloudy and 82. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan, taking the art of sports radio and day drinking to a whole new level. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
So I mentioned Deion Sanders with the Dominic Robinson, you can't wear my number, or at least that was certainly what was inferred all those years ago. Deion's been in the news, obviously, the last several years from what he's done at Colorado, the incredible comet they were in year one, Heisman Trophy for Travis, and obviously an incredible season at a Shador in year two, and then last year really fell off a cliff, and we'll see what they're all about this year. But this is a program, and it's, I mean, it was a place that, quite honestly, in high school, I was intended on going to, was the University of Colorado. This is a place that is a bit of an outpost. It just is. It's north of Denver by about an hour, but in terms of coverage, my hunch is there's not a massive beat of people that are covering the University of Colorado's football program. There's probably more now than there were until you go all the way back to the early 90s when they were won a national championship with Bill McCartney when he was the head coach out there then. But they've had a gulf of decades where they were really hanging on by a thread as a program, and Deion certainly elevated all of that and got them back in the mix and people back aware from. They landed a five-star quarterback from the state of Georgia that I'm assuming is going to start this year out there. So James Seaton, who's now, by the way, at LSU, he was a big-time tackle they landed. So they've done some things, and there's a little bit of momentum there. We'll see how long all of it lasts. But something's going on. So I saw this yesterday. Colorado hosted an open practice on Tuesday for fans and reporters. So this was the first time that they had done that under Deion Sanders. So here's the catch. Not only was there no reporting on anything that anybody witnessed in the practice, Colorado, via their athletic department, sent out an email that said in part, quote, "Nothing observed at practice may be reported, published, posted, broadcast, or otherwise shared in any form or on any platform at any time. If you are uncertain whether something is reportable, the answer that it is not." Here's the other part. Fans and media who attended the practice, and by the way, I'd love to know a head count on what this number was. Fans and media that attended the practice were required to hand over their phones, which were then held by Colorado and returned after practice ended. Fan tickets to practice were sold out in a day. So there was a pretty good, whatever that number is, there was some anticipation for it and people were excited about it. So I've been to like a Kevin Hart comedy show, and this is what they make you do. I don't know if you, for those of you out there listening, if you've been to like a big time comedian show in the last 5 years, this is what you do. You walk in, you go through the metal detector stuff, and then they take your phone and they put it in a Ziploc bag with a lock on it. It's got a lock. And then you take it with you in, but then they have the key to unlock it, and you only get it unlocked when you go out. And the idea being, I mean, I get that. They don't want you shooting a bit that's going to end up in a Netflix special. So I understand it. I mean, that's literally their livelihood. I've never seen anything quite like this at the college level. The idea of you can't report anything you see. I mean, the list of things, by the way, I'm giving you the Reader's Digest. The list of things that they went through, I think probably best summed up by, if you are uncertain whether something is reportable, the answer that it is not, that probably sums it up about as well as you can. I don't get the win here for him on this. I don't, other than looking small and petty and honestly looking like you have something to hide is honestly the first thing that comes to my mind. And I do know that there is some other stuff going on out there in regard to is it Shiloh who played out there? Isn't he in trouble with some bankruptcy stuff? I think there's something out there going on. There's a lot happening, but this is an odd look at best. It's an odd look at best. And it just makes me think, like, what's our timeline on how long all of this lasts out there?
He's probably got the leash to stay, I guess, as long as he wants to, because we're talking about Colorado football at practice, and they're selling out. And it's kind of like Akron. Like, you kind of know your ceiling. And so for Akron and the play that they're letting one fan call, they're selling out of their, you know, opening game, or I guess their first game suites. And Colorado's doing something similar with practice selling out. Probably never happened before. I do know at Ohio State, you know, each of the days we were at training camp last week, there was a very enthusiastic Anthony Schlegel telling fans, don't record. And so I think there was that, hey, let's not record team sessions. Let's not record during team while they're trying to do install. They weren't taking phones. So that does strike me a little concerning.
Where, so did Schlegel do that Saturday?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, they were. And I think there was explicit language in tickets that said, please don't record during sessions. But phones were allowed because they do want to get that kind of social content out there. So the idea that they're taking the phone struck me as just odd. You know, we know that coaches are the most superstitious. Paranoid, I think, would probably be the better word there. But we also know that Deion Sanders likes to have total control over everything. Mm-hmm. And so this also feels like that, where he's allowing you in, but only on his terms completely. And I think only because he's at Colorado, that stands. I wonder if he'd tried something similar at Florida State, where you would see people going, well, that's not going to fly here. But at Colorado, because he kind of runs that program and he's got carte blanche to do whatever, it's totally fine. And their fans seem okay with it because they sold out ticket sales.
So, Bo, I want to say Shiloh's also being sued by one of his former teammates.
Is that what it is?
I mean, I think the bankruptcy stuff and whatever, that all of that might be true as well. But I remember there was something with him and a former teammate. He hit a former teammate in practice or something, and there was some stuff there. Shame on the reporters for not reporting.
Yeah.
Right? And who knows? Maybe the University of Colorado would have pulled their access. If they did, I think that would have been a whole crap storm that they don't want to mess with, because your reporters still have to report. I understand, and you mentioned Reese Schlegel with his thing saying don't record. I understand you don't want that stuff to get out there, but I don't think you got to take people's phones. Just have people watching, and if you see them recording, they get kicked out, and you lost your money for the day. You can't watch anymore. I don't know, maybe Colorado, I mean, I could see this in the future where these schools have deals to make money where they can put out practice footage sponsored by somebody, and so they don't want that out there. They don't want coaches seeing it. Coaches are super secretive. I get all that, but there's no need to invite people in and then take their stuff. Like, just tell them to leave.
Let me ask you guys a question. It's rhetorical, obviously. Am I allowed to watch every minute of NFL training camp? Would either of you be allowed to watch every minute of an NFL training camp?
No.
Well, of course you would. If you were credentialed.
No.
You could watch anything you want. You could watch from start to finish. You could watch for an hour and a half. I mean, I've seen every, other than the time when I was at Ohio State camp Thursday, Friday, I've seen every single play from Browns training camp from the start till now. And anybody who's credentialed would have the same ability to do so. And by the way, thousands of fans go to those. If it's okay in the NFL, what's the deal with college? I mean, the NFL, you do install. From a Browns perspective, you're in week three of training camp. Every NFL team is. They all have open. You've seen the pictures from Latrobe with Pittsburgh. I mean, how many people look like there? 20,000 people? Has that stopped the Pittsburgh Steelers from winning games? These college coaches got to chill out, man. You got to chill out. No one's stealing your stuff, man.
Someone might take my backup quarterback.
Like, come on, man. Like, chill out. There's nothing that is going to happen in the first 10 days of a training camp that is going to impact if the video is out there. Wins and losses in September. I don't know when college got so crazy like this. It's been this way for 20 years, at least. It's been this way, where they're so secretive about all this stuff. Like, this is craziness. And this is it to the nth degree. This is it to the nth degree. Just follow the NFL's rules. If it's okay for the NFL, it's okay for you. No one's going to steal your trick play. You're fine. It all works. Don't use it in a preseason. I mean, my God, the NFL plays preseason games too. Like, it's about execution more than anything else. I will say I was pretty shocked when Kevin Hart took my phone and locked it in a thing. I was not anticipating that when that happened a couple years ago. That was a bit of a shocker to see that. I'm like, my wife was in panic. She's like, what happens if something's wrong with the boys? How will they get in touch with us? I'm like, well, they won't. Kevin Hart has our phones. There's no way. There are no emergencies. For the next 3 hours, buckle in. You're going to watch his preamble acts, and you're going to watch him, and you're going to have no contact with anybody. It's the way it's going to go. It worked out okay. Will the Buckeye defense be more than okay It probably needs to be more than okay. Does it have to be great? We'll get to that coming up in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the Fan.
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
What's up?
What's up, man?
What's up, Juice?
Sponsored by Apex Pros.
The pros who knows.
All right, here's what's up on a Thursday edition of the program. There's been more than one instance over the last couple of weeks where you see Caleb Downs shadowing CeeDee Lamb and knocking the ball out and going, good Lord. I mean, how good was that guy? Or you see Sonny Styles doing an interview with the Washington Commanders team media guys, and you see them going, gosh, normally people write a card over here and you walk and you talk to people over there and they're like, yeah, he's going to be a captain really, really soon. Or you hear like Peter Schrager talk about Arvell Reese and call him RoboCop. And that all he does is work and tackle and hit people and all of these things. And you see all of these things over the last couple of weeks, and you just go, my goodness, how great was that defense a year ago? And the answer was, it may have been the best defense to ever play here. And that's saying something, because we've had a lot of them. But it might be by the time all is said and done. They were the number one defense for the second year in a row. Last year felt even different than that with those three guys. That triumvirate, you'll never see a better three than those three guys at those positions when you think about just their talent, the plays they made, and then obviously the way that they were drafted in the National Football League. And yet, despite all of that, Ohio State opens this season, the coaches poll at least. When do we get the AP? Is that tomorrow?
Tomorrow at noon.
Tomorrow, right after.
Yep.
The AP, my hunch would feel, I'm interested to see what the AP does, quite honestly, as a quick aside. They could go in a lot of different ways here. I mean, there's certainly the Buckeyes, Oregon, Georgia, would all three be in the mix, maybe Notre Dame, those four. Interesting to see how they shuffle all of that out. Irregardless, the Buckeyes will start number one, at least in one poll, in the coaches poll, and they'll start in the top three in the AP. I would bet almost anything on that as well. So how is this possible? And it's cliche. We say it so often now that it becomes, I'm sure it gets tone deaf, and I get it. Not reload, rebuild, don't rebuild, reload, so forth and so on. I think they're going to go about it in a very different way, though. We had Matt Patricia on with us on Thursday at camp last week, and I asked him about replacing the NFL guys who left, and I thought he gave a pretty interesting answer. Let's have a listen to it.
I never say you replace, right? Because yeah. I don't think you ever replace anybody, but I think we just got to understand next man up, and opportunity is there, and the group is done an unbelievable job from winter to spring ball to summer to now we're finally here in training camp where we get to kind of get after a little bit and you know, set the standard for this year. It'll be this year's defense and these guys going out doing what they can to help us to win, and that's the fun part. It's really cool. So I'm excited for these guys.
He also gave an illuminating answer on the talent on that side of the ball that he expects to use this season. Here he is on the depth.
I think with last year, you know, as we looked at the group, when those guys had a real opportunity to go play, I think they just kind of took it and ran. But they played. Like, they didn't, there wasn't a lot of maybe subbing those guys out.
Sure.
I think this year what's going to be different is I think we just have depth. You know, I think we have the guys underneath that are now 1 year older, the guys that came in. So maybe it isn't the multiplicity in that way. Maybe it's a little bit just more platoon. Maybe it's a little bit more waves kind of coming at you. And we'll really work through that during camp and see how much they can handle. And a lot of that stuff, too, even, you know, where we wound up at the end of the season compared to where you start at the beginning of the season, sometimes that grows through the year. And sometimes that can be maybe really good because you're figuring out who you are and what you do well, and maybe you can work towards that path as the season goes.
Guy who knows a little bit about this is the guy who wore 33 pretty famously around here. Remember, he got thrust into action when Bob got hurt in the Michigan game, and the rest kind of ended up being history. Here is Threes on what separates Ohio State from other programs.
The unique thing about Ohio State that I think is different from, gosh, it seems like every other blue blood program is, and we've talked about it when we were hosting together, like it's the lack of the dip,
yep,
right, and what the expectations and the production. But the culture has been established way back from Woody. And no matter what coach has come through, they have their own style. But the main culture of the university, you know, the tradition, the people, the excellence has maintained. And so Woody said it, you win with people. And obviously that carried along to every coach after him. And Coach Day's done a phenomenal job. I know he reaches out to the former players all the time and wants them to feel welcome as well. So just part of it, man. It's this weird but awesome, hey, I'm going to make sure the guys behind me, hopefully they're better than I am,
mm-hmm,
right? And then hopefully you did something to elevate the standard that came before you. And those are massive shoulders that we all stand on, the guys that laid the foundation here.
All right, so this leads into a conversation about this defense and what is expected of it. If you had to pick a player off of this defense to be a first-round pick in next year's NFL draft, who would you pick? Next year's draft.
I'm going to go friend of the program, James Smith.
Transfer out of Alabama?
Transfer from Alabama. I think there's enough there with the body of work that he's done at Alabama, and then coming to Ohio State, I think will put him in national spotlight games where he'd be able to shine. An incredible athlete, a mountain of a man, and just an incredible personality that I think teams are going to love to talk to. Like, he's one of those guys that's going to go to the combine. He's going to, all the physical things are going to be there. I expect a great season from him statistically, but then he'll be able, everything intangibly. Like, I don't think enough can be said about the job that this coaching staff did in bringing the proper people into this Ohio State defense. Not just great players, but Christian Allegro, Earl Little, Terry Moore, I mean, guys that are, you know, guys that have seen so much football, but guys that have, they have their stuff together. They're bleeped together in the best way possible.
So I guess I haven't seen enough football from a Christian Allegro or an Earl Little to say it will be one of those.
Mm-hmm.
I would say the person on this defense that has the best chance to be a number one pick next year, and I'm not sure he has the size, but I would say Jermaine Matthews Jr.
Yeah, I was. That's probably where I was going to go to, is Jermaine at corner was one that kind of feels like that. Obviously, a lot of attention is going to be on Kenyatta going, I mean, with the number change, all of it, like he's going to be there too. But the reason I asked the question is, it goes back to the comment that Patricia said about depth. You could look at last year's defense and go, bing, 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 bing. These are the guys. Like, these guys will be. I'm not sure who it is. So this, I think, will be more of a, we're going to have to win best 11 versus being covered up, mistakes covered up when there are, by number 2, number 0, and number 8. This is going to take all of them rowing in the same direction, because when I look at this thing, and maybe Jermaine turns into that, maybe James has that type of year, maybe Kenyatta has that type of year at defensive end. I mean, all these things are possible. All these guys have the pedigree for it. But the reality, maybe it's Earl Little, a lot of buzz around him. Maybe he's that. I'm sure Devin Sanchez will get there by the time he's draft eligible. He's just not draft eligible right now. I'm sure Jay Timmons certainly is off to a pretty good start as being a guy who potentially could play into that. Sincere Johnson, by the way. There's another one that looked down the road, Riley Pettijohn. Like, there's a lot, tons of talent everywhere. But what I'm saying is, I just mentioned names, by the way, guys, of guys within the depth chart, not necessarily starters, but guys who are deep in the depth chart in some instances. So I think that this Buckeye defense this year is going to be one that kind of comes in waves. And I think they are, I mean, when Matt tells you on the first day of camp, we're going to play a lot of guys and we're deeper, I take note of that, because I think they will. I think that this defense is going to rotate through a lot of guys across the board.
Yeah, and especially through the first probably half of the season, you'll see just, you know, you look at their two deep, and a lot of those guys will be getting, you know, similar reps. And I think, was it 2 years ago, maybe Ryan Day likened the defense to a crosswalk in Times Square? I think that's what you're going to get for the first couple of weeks at least. Maybe Texas, they don't rotate as much. But last season, you never took Sonny Arvell or Caleb off the field. This
never.
Season, it's, what does the offense present us? What does the personnel that we have dictate that we need out there? I think they're going to lean on that a lot more. And then maybe later on in the season, when they've got their best 11, they say, okay, we'll stick with that more so than try to rotate guys in and out, because you just, maybe a Christian Allegro becomes the guy you just can't take off the field.
It's interesting, two things while you were talking. Thank you, Ohio State, by the way, yesterday for removing Jay Timmons' black stripe after we said he's going to be one of the numbers that we're going to say, oh, look, there's 25.
Yeah.
But as you were talking, Bo, I was, and it's crazy because we haven't even started this season, but I'm already thinking, man, how exciting is it going to be to have this experience on defense next year? Because you're going to be losing a couple guys.
Gosh.
But Devin Sanchez will be a year older. Peyton Pierce will be a year older. A Zion Grady and Edrick Houston will be a year older. And then I was thinking, Well, we're going to be having this same conversation about the offense next year. Can Tavian St. Clair or whoever it is step in for Julian? Who's going to replace Jeremiah? We think it's Chris Henry Jr., and we think we'll know. What about the offensive line? You're losing five starters. Like, we're going to have this same conversation next year about the offense.
Struck me as well as we were talking there. A very similar thing ran through my head, Bake, because it feels like last year, obviously, you were hoping the offense could come along and get to a point where the defense, we knew the defense was going to be great. We just didn't know about Matt. We didn't know what that was all going to look like. But as soon as you saw what he did against Texas, you said, okay, well, that's it. And then this year it's flipped.
It's funny, though, you say last year we knew the defense was going to be great. You had three studs. Well, you thought Arvell was a stud, but you knew Sonny and Caleb were. You thought Arvell was from what you had seen. But you had eight guys you were replacing. So I don't think we knew that the defense was going to be what it was and be really good.
I knew linebackers would be first round picks. That I knew.
That's fair.
I mean, I have a guy, so I kind of knew that was going to be the case, and I knew what Caleb Downs was. So those, I think we all did. But like that, this is a little bit more unknown, but it is fun. I think this is going to be a really fun defense to see how it comes along. And I think when you start to see some of these young cats start to get some, I'll tell you what, a body transformation guy, Riley Pettijohn, doesn't even look like the same human. I mean, his face looks similar, but compared to what he was as a freshman coming in here now, that's a big dude. That is a big dude. And he was hurt in spring, and obviously you got veterans. Peyton Pierce isn't going to come off the field at all, but you got like a veteran in Christian Allegro, and how does he, you know, get time? But I think threes will rotate those guys through a lot. I do. And I think the same thing's going to happen. If you look, the only spot on this defense that I think really could get tested early could be the secondary a little bit. Especially that first game, that's game two against Texas, because that's a lot of young kids in there. They brought in the transfers, obviously more from Duke, little from Florida State, and they have some returners in Matthews, McLean, and Sanchez. But then when you start to play depth there, it gets young quick. Like Jay Timmons is a true freshman running nickel first couple of practices. That's noteworthy. That's a young kid out there. And we saw at times last year, Devin was out there young and a little bit out over his skis. I think it paid off, and I think it's going to pay off big this year because he looks elite. But that could be the part there, just the depth on that side of it. Are they going to be ready for that first game down in Austin? So it's going to be very fascinating to watch this defense grow. The sports of last night, including a black stripe that goes away. We will get to that, among other things, coming up next. Bishop and Friends, right here.
Do you feel that? The season is getting closer. Buckeye football comes your way in 23 days. Every game. Every season. Proud to be your flagship home for Ohio State football. The Fan. Ohio sports destination. All your favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. Bo knows many people. He talks to the interesting ones on this show. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, last night, Bake actually alluded to this. Freshman corner Jay Timmons became the third newcomer this year to have his black stripe removed after practice. I do like this tradition. I think it's pretty cool. Four-star corner from Pennsylvania. Been a camp standout. He was in the middle of the two-deep very, very early on. We also got the OSU camp schedule for the rest of the week as well, including availabilities and all of the things that go with that. I'll tell you what, guys. One of the most interesting stories kind of out of nowhere in the sports world right now is this sale of the Lakers. So this happened yesterday when we were on the show, and Andrew Siciliano, play-by-play voice of the Browns, was joining us, and it happened within a couple of minutes of when he joined, and he's lived in Los Angeles for, you know, 25 years or so now. And I asked him, I saw him later yesterday afternoon, and I asked him, you know, like, as you were, did you talk to people out there about it? And he said there was no whisper of this. None. Mark Walter, who runs the Guggenheim Group and owns the Dodgers, just bought the team 14, 15 months ago and paid $10 billion on the evaluation of it. And part of the agreement was that Jeannie Buss would remain the managing governor of the Lakers for, I think, a five-year period. And now, a little more than a year later, he sells it to former Disney boss Bob Iger and the Kushner, who's Jared Kushner's brother, who of course is married to Ivanka Trump. So they sold to them for $12.5 billion and flipped, certainly on a short list, the most storied professional sports franchise in North America. It's right there. I mean, them and the Yankees, they're right there. The Celtics, there's a couple others, but I mean, it's very at the top of the list and certainly the most valuable NBA franchise, and buys them for 12.5. And then I started to read into it and saw that Walter was under investigation by the Justice Department for some other things. I was listening to Bill Simmons, who's just plugged in on the NBA and has lived in LA for 25 years on this. And he called it yesterday the most shocking sale in the history of the 80 years of the National Basketball Association. Just odd. All of it's odd. And red flags up everywhere on it. I don't know if the NBA has to approve sales like this before they are announced. And that league's in a weird spot because Tom Dundon, who owns the Carolina Hurricanes, just bought the Portland Trail Blazers. And if you pay attention to that, it certainly looks like he's tearing all of that down to move it, is what it seems like from, you know, 3,000 miles away. That's what it seems like, firing everybody, getting rid of assistant coaches, all of these things that he's doing there, making the city pay for the stadium renovations, all of those things. It feels like he's setting them up to be moved. This Kushner Iger group was interested previously in buying an expansion team for Las Vegas. And the fee on that was around, I thought I saw somewhere between $6 and $7 billion is what they were going to charge for an expansion fee in Las Vegas. Well, now all of a sudden they get to buy the Lakers for almost 50% more of what they were willing to pay. There'll be a 30 for 30. Well, I don't know if there'll be a 30 for 30 on it, but there will be a documentary on this. Or there will be some reporting on it. And I will be fascinated to read it because these things don't come out of nowhere quite like this one did.
Yeah, fascinating is the word, and it's going to be a fascinating series with Walter and his financial portfolio under investigation. Bob Iger did tell the California Post that they will honor the Jeannie Buss agreement. I don't know what it means for, I think, Dr. Buss's other two kids who were part of the Lakers, whether they stay on in some form or fashion. So the sale still needs to be completed. They've got to do a full due diligence with the NBA, and the deal's going to be need to be approved by at least 3/4 of the NBA's board of governors. But I can't see why they wouldn't allow this sale to go through, especially if Mark Walter and the Guggenheim group are being investigated. I would imagine the NBA would not want an ownership, or at least an owner that's being investigated. They would rather this stay as clean as humanly possible. I don't know what you call that with billionaires and with the kind of money that's being thrown around in this case. But yeah, I wonder if Portland's the next domino to fall in all of this, because those two felt like the money would be right there for the expansion. I guess I'd rather have the Lakers than have to worry about an expansion into Vegas or into Seattle, yeah, or back into Seattle. But yeah, it's an insane amount of money. $12.5 billion, and what, October of last year was when it was sold.
Yeah,
so I mean, the check he's going to cut is going to be great.
They said by the time that the first sale actually went through, that Walter had owned the Lakers for maybe right around a year, and then he turns around and sells them for $2.5 billion more than he paid. I mean, that's the
greatest house flip of all time.
Yeah, I mean, that's like the epitome of a great investment. It's interesting. Ramona Shelburne was reporting, and Bo, you were talking about the surprise and shock of this.
Yeah.
It sounds like this happened within a 72-hour period. Like,
yes,
they knew this was available. They asked Walter about it over the weekend, and then boom, it happens on Wednesday.
100%. And the other thing, yeah, according to Simmons' reporting, and I think maybe he was parroting Ramona's, they basically called on Sunday and said, "Would you be interested in selling the Lakers?" What? What are you talking about? Here's the other thing that's interesting, and Simmons talked about this, and this is why I think there's more to this. He said that the Dodgers and Lakers, because Walter's group, the Guggenheim group, they own the Dodgers and the Lakers. They owned them both. And they were basically integrating both brands together and kind of creating like a Los Angeles super operation.
Could Ohtani play the point?
I mean,
his knee's not doing well right now.
Maybe
but
shooting guard.
Yeah, okay.
He could probably. I bet he'd shoot 90%.
Ball goes through Luka, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
No,
I think that's interesting though, like that they were working so hard to like integrate those two operations, and then just out of nowhere shuts it down. There's more to it.
I did see that they said that the Dodgers part of this is not for sale. Like, nobody's going to get the Dodgers part of this.
Oh, no way. I mean, by the way, and I said this yesterday, and just as reacting this off the top of my head, if you're Walter, you're going, wait a second, I can just buy all the best players in baseball and I can't in basketball? It's pretty easy in baseball if you got money. It's you can do it. There's nothing prohibiting you from getting all the players, and they've kind of done all of that. So it's something to bear watching there is that situation. Some red flags on all of it. We'll open up the mailbag coming up in the second hour. Mr. Feinbaum at 10:30, Bishop and Friends right here.
Broadcasting live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios, driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning, I'm Eric Reeser. 11 teams begin the preseason tonight in the NFL. One of them is the Cincinnati Bengals. They'll host the Detroit Lions Thursday at 7 o'clock. Zach Taylor says Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, T. Higgins, and defensive tackle Dexter Lawrence will play in limited action. As for the Browns, Cleveland's at Chicago Saturday at 1. Deshaun Watson will get the start in preseason game number 1. Shedeur Sanders will start next Saturday when Cleveland hosts the Lions, or the Bills, I should say. The team's still working through a quarterback competition. Here, Browns preseason football on the fans Saturday at 1. In college football, Ohio State continues fall camp this morning. Defensive coordinator Matt Patricia will meet with the media following Thursday's practice. In baseball, both the Guardians and Reds play this afternoon. Cleveland's at Detroit at 1:10. Cincinnati wraps in Chicago against the White Sox at 2:10. And the Clippers have day baseball in the Arena District. Columbus hosts Omaha at 12:05. This update is sponsored by High Bank Distillery Co. Locally inspired dishes and award-winning cocktails. Visit highbankco.com to make your reservation today. Dine, drink, distill at High Bank.
What's the weather outside? Who cares? Bakers and shorts. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, second hour of the program. Paul Feinbaum joining us in 28 minutes from now. We will ask him about the Jaden Daniels situation down at the Louisiana State University. We kick off the hour, though, by opening up that mailbag. Hit it, fellas.
Our comment box is always open. Any feedback is mostly appreciated.
The mail never stops. It just keeps coming and coming and coming. There's never a let up. It's relentless. Every day it piles up more and more and more. You got to get it up. And the more you get out, the more it keeps coming in. Again.
Bishop and Friends present Emails.
Sponsored by Window Nation. Get 50% off all window styles plus no payments for 2 years. Visit windownation.com.
Well, I tell you what, you know it's football season when you open up the mailbag and you get one from our old buddy Greg from Botkins, who emails every week in football season. I very much look forward to him. I got three things for you, he writes. Ryan Day made an interesting comment that the win last year on November 29th wasn't just for his Buckeye team, but for every Buckeye fan. Well, he's right. That win in Ann Arbor was for my late Uncle Mike, a.k.a. Mr. Fun. That win against that team up north was for my father, who just beat prostate cancer and had triple bypass surgery. That win was for everyone who needed to breathe a sigh of relief. The Buckeyes take the high road to get a win, and we don't hire a sign stealer to get a win. My last and final point. Is that team up north similar to the Seinfeld episode at the Hamptons? Remember the shrinkage? I was at the poll! If she thinks that's who I am, then she's strongly mistaken. I think there's a strong correlation between George being like a frightened turtle in the current state of the program in Ann Arbor. Well crafted, Greg. I really don't know. I actually watched yesterday. This is how much of a sicko I am for college football. Yesterday I watched a 30-minute on BTN. They're doing like their camp tours, and they were in Ann Arbor yesterday. So I just was curious about all of it. And it was Dave Revson and DiNardo. They were up there. And they were talking to Kyle Whittingham. And I'm listening to Whittingham, and to me he just felt like a fixer. I don't know if they'll win big there with him. My hunch is there will be some limitations, and I think they've got a lot to overcome, and certainly not hoping for them to win. But it just felt like they needed somebody to come in and wipe the slate clean a little bit, and it feels like he's kind of doing that. It's such a strange one. He said, Revson asked him, he said, you know, how did you end up here kind of thing? You have no ties to the University of Michigan. You grew up in California. He had been at the University of, he's been at Utah since 1995. He was there over 30 years at Utah as a defensive coordinator. He actually was there predated Urban and then stayed on and then became the head coach for 20 years after that. And he said that he just had a list of jobs. He wasn't done coaching. He had a list of jobs. And he said he even talked to Urban about it. And Urban said, you're crazy if you don't take it. So it's fascinating. I really don't know what they're going to be this year. But I think at the very least, from their perspective, and I know we do have some Michigan fans in the audience, I think you're going to get a clean slate with Whittingham. I think he's Mr. Wolf in Pulp Fiction.
So that win back in November, I would say, is the most cathartic win I've experienced in my 36 years in terms of Ohio State football and finally getting it over. Yeah. Because of how long the streak was, because of everything that was involved from the Michigan man's perspective with the national championship and the signs and Sharon Moore and Jim Harbaugh and all of that, it felt so good. And I think the players, it felt good for them, too. It's why they were able to celebrate so well with Ohio State fans in Ann Arbor. I mean, the Brutus running through the snow and script Ohio and Michigan's end zone, like, all of that just felt so good. And, you know, congratulate. It was Mr. Fun, I think he called his grandfather.
Yeah. Mr.
All of it wonderful, and yeah. Congratulations on everybody and being able to celebrate in the way that Ohio State fans were able to with that because of that win. I don't know if there's been a moment other than Jim Tressel saying in however many days we'll be proud of our young people when Ryan Day made that comment. It's like he gets it.
Yeah.
I was in the pool! I was in the pool!
Play that for Greg.
Costanza.
And this is one of the reasons we love college football so much. Like, these last 4 years have been brutal, especially coming off of the last 20 years that you've had against that team. So that win last year felt so good. And, Reese, you mentioned Jim Tressel coming out and saying that on the floor at the shot. 310 days.
Yeah.
You'll be proud of our kids up in Ann Arbor, Michigan. And that place exploded because that's what they wanted to hear. They knew this guy got it. And then when he went up there and he backed it up, as somebody who grew up in the 90s, that was the greatest feeling in the world. And you got some of that last year with that win. And that's why we love college sports so much.
This one from Chris. Signetti and a smorgasbord. Dear world traveler Bo, the newly engaged greaser, and to Bainbridge Bake. 2 years ago, I made a bold prediction on social media. Whoever hires Kirk Signetti will beat Ohio State within 2 years. Back then, I admired Indiana's relentless foot-on-your-neck style of offense, exactly the kind of play calling I always wished Ryan Day would bring to Ohio State. Little did I know, Indiana football would actually retain him. So my prediction was right about the coach, just not the team. That prediction came back to haunt me about a month after the national title game as I pulled out Buckeye State Bank just north of Chillicothe on Route 23. I saw a digital billboard of Fernando Mendoza driving into the end zone against Miami with the score of the championship game. I was trolled in my own backyard for at least 2 months by some IU fan. That's unbelievable. Good Lord. The irony of the bank's name is not lost on me, nor is the money spent for some random sign by some random fan. They are no longer the sleeping giant. They pay to troll you in your own state. That's incredible. I can't believe I didn't get some sort of an image of that. Changing gears from Signetti to Saban, I wanted to say how touching it was to hear stories about, and I believe your great aunt in Montana and Uncle Gerald. I was one of many who wrote in asking for more, and it sounds like there are still stories left to share. Yes, there are. Finally, with Bo's knack of remembering details, did the Bo picture in your bio first appear in Sports Illustrated before it became a card? I saw some iconic Michael Jordan shots started in SI and ended up as posters. As a kid in the 1990s, I couldn't afford the posters, so my walls were covered with cutouts from SI. Mine were too, by the way. Luckily, every year my grandmother always let me pick one magazine for Christmas for remote reading, and SI was always mine. It was my mom, but we have that in common. That's me parenthetically. If there's time, I've got to ask, has Bake ever played Valley Vista Golf Course, and does he know the history of the camp that goes all the way back to the Reds? Before you answer that, I believe the Bo Jackson, what does it say? It's got the one that it's in my Twitter bio. It's him with the bat and the shoulder pads. I believe that's Nike. I'm pretty sure Nike did that. I think Nike did that as part of their campaign. Have you played Valley Vista, Bake?
So when I was little, every year when we would go down to my uncle's house for the Fall Festival of Leaves, all the guys would get together and we would actually go play Valley Vista. Now, I was young, Bo. I don't think I've played there since I was probably 12 or 13.
Yeah.
So I don't really have any memories of the course. The only thing I really remember is it seemed like the sign was so close to the road that if you drove by, you would hit it. Like your window would hit it. Like it was that close. Like it was like a mailbox right on the edge of the road. But that's really the only thing I remember about it. But I did play it a lot when I was a young lad.
That's very cool. This one from Dan. The title is Harbaugh. Remember this with a question mark. And then he quotes Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh says Michigan will beat Ohio State or die trying. That was on July 22nd, 2021 at Big Ten Media Days. Jim Harbaugh stated that Michigan would win the championship and beat rivals like Ohio State and Michigan State, declaring, that's what we want to do. We're going to do it or die trying. Maybe die trying was not literal, but more likely killing our reputations and credibility. I think there's no question that you can draw a straight line from... I think, and we talked about this with the Whittingham comments and the Underwood comments from earlier in the week, I think Jim Harbaugh was broken at this moment. When he was in that press conference at Ohio State and he said he was that far short, I think that broke Jim Harbaugh. And then I think Ohio State burying him the next couple of times that they played just continued to add to it. I think not playing in 2020. And then I think he said, to hell with it. And the Stallions kid came up to him and said, hey, man, I'm on to something here. And it truly was a deal with the devil. And for him, he gets to be Danny Ocean and suffer none of the slings and arrows of it. He gets to go coach in Southern California for the Chargers and coach Justin Herbert and all of those things. And so he doesn't really, other than just reputationally, nationally in college football, which is in tatters, he doesn't really suffer from this. He's living in his own silo of NFL. And then when he goes to Ann Arbor, I'm sure he's treated like a hero when he goes back there. Because he won a national title. He went 15-0. This was a class. I think everything you write is true. We've said it for a long time. Like, if, and by the way, I would say a lot of college football programs, if they were in the spot that the Michigan program was for the decade before Harbaugh went on his run and inevitably culminated with a national title, that a lot of college football programs probably would do the same thing. Like, would you take all of the embarrassment for a national title? I think Michigan's not alone in that. I don't think it would maybe be something that happened here because we have so much success year in and year out. But it, for example, if that scenario played out at Bama, where you went like 20 years with two wins over your rivals and you watched Auburn win national titles and beat the brakes off you all the time, like, would Bama do that? Yeah, I think they probably would. I think they probably would do a lot of the things that Harbaugh greenlit at Michigan. So... But I think you're right. I think some very solid points there. We'll continue with the mailbag coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here on The Fan.
The Buckeyes are number one. And you can hear all the games here on The Fan, which is also number one. Coincidence? I think not. Your home of champions, The Fan.
At CEC, Ben Stiller just landed. And this is what I told him last night.
Wait, whoa. And I told him last night. Yeah.
Rockman and Ice, weekdays at noon.
Sponsored by Pella Columbus.
The Fan. Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a partly cloudy sky for the rest of the day. Watching for a chance of showers and a few thunderstorms to arrive toward the evening hours out of the west. Otherwise, it'll be a humid afternoon with highs in the mid-80s. Chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms overnight could be a localized downpour with lows around 70. For the day tomorrow, chance of showers and storms mainly in the morning, otherwise partly to mostly cloudy and 82. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. Pull up a stool and ask the bartender for something neat. Because Uncle Bo is on the radio. This is Bishop and Friends.
And as always, we are proudly brought to you and sponsored by our great friends at Diamond Cellar, your true jeweler for nearly 80 years. Back to the mailbag we go. This one from Jeremiah. He writes, I want to tell you a story about a sports road trip. In November of 2012, my buddy and I were on our way to Wisconsin to the Wisconsin-Ohio State away game. It was Friday afternoon, just a few hours into the drive. We said we should also try to go to the Bengals away game at Kansas City on Sunday, even though we hadn't planned that as part of the trip. I looked up the Chiefs tickets office number. Before I could say anything, the guy answers the phone. 614 area code. Are you from Columbus? I replied that we are and we're on our way to Wisconsin away game. We wanted to see if we could have enough time to do both games. The guy said he was from Columbus, graduated from Ohio State, that he had just moved to Kansas City a year ago, that he had ever been to Wisconsin as a Buckeye fan, too. He said we definitely had enough time to do both games, so I asked him how much the tickets cost. He said they gave them season tickets for working there and that he had to work his other job on Sunday, so he would leave them at will call for us. I wasn't sure, so I asked again how much the tickets would cost. His exact words were, you don't understand. You're a Buckeye. You're family. They're free. I had never met him before, talked to him for less than 2 minutes. He gave us tickets for free. We got deep dish pizza in Chicago Friday night, went to the Wisconsin game on Saturday. We won in overtime, got to experience jump around at night. We drove south after the game, stopped at a hotel in Iowa, In the morning, we drove the rest of the way to Kansas City, and the tickets were there. We had KC barbecue inside the stadium, and the Bengals won. We drove the whole way home after the game and got back 3 a.m. Monday morning. Fast forward to the fall of 2013. I had extra tickets to the first three OSU home games. I called the ticket office back and told him if he could make it for any of the games that I would leave the mail, that I would love to mail him the tickets. Him and his wife drove up for the first game, and it all came full circle. It's my favorite story of Buckeye fans looking out for one another and shows we are the best fan base in the nation. Go Bucks. That's beautiful. That's absolutely beautiful. Here's something that I think that kids don't think about enough. I think about it with my boys. Life's about relationships. Where you go to high school, the friends that you meet in high school, the relationships that you curate there are going to shape the way that your life starts. The relationships that you have in college, where you go to school, the people you interact with, the alumni base, that's going to impact the rest of your life. I think about this all the time when I see these kids from the north going to these kind of, in some instances, out-of-the-way schools in the south for Sun and so forth and so on. Well, for example, and by the way, I would love to go to Ole Miss and go to the Grove. But when I graduate from the University of Mississippi, where's the alumni base to take care of me? Is it in Memphis and northern Mississippi? Do I want to live there? Those are the things that I think kids don't think enough about when they make these type of decisions in terms of high school and college. I think that's a great story right there from Jeremiah. I mean, Reese, you think about you with the Bobcat alumni and all of that, and certainly in our business, that's a pretty strong alumni group.
Yeah, looking next fall for a trip to Morgantown.
Yeah.
So I want to see if there's anything, because, I mean, the combining of different things you love on the same weekend sports-wise, everybody's got a bucket list like that somewhere.
That's a pretty good get, Bake. I mean, from Madison to KC to home in 72 hours?
Yeah, the brotherhood extends to the Ohio State fandom.
It does.
As well, right? And it's I just couldn't help when thinking of James with you guys last week talking about the backerhood shirts. And not only did he give him to his room, but he sent one to Chris Spielman. He sent one to Steve Tovar. He sent one to those guys because it means something. And I remember Bob talking about this back when all of the NIL started. And he's like, I think of all the guys here that we've gone to school with, and that when they need something, they reach out, or their businesses, and they're hiring former Buckeyes, and Buckeyes getting in the media here. He's like, how's that going to happen if you come here and then transfer out? Some of these guys aren't going to have that base to fall back on when their careers are over, whether that be after college or the pros.
No. This one from John, he writes, so how concerned are you guys about the Ferrari not being tested at maximum performance throughout the year like last year? You guys are the best. So he's referring to Ohio State as a football Ferrari last year. You never really got it out on the track until towards the end of the year. You got it at the beginning. We thought you were going to get it at the Penn State game, and then you got it, obviously, in the playoff. Well, listen, the Ferrari is going to get run a lot this year. It's going to get a lot of test drives. It's going to be at Monza. It's going to be at Monaco. It's going to be all of the places that you would want it to be. It's going to be driven. It's going to be driven hard. It's going to be Michael Schumacher and whoever else is driving. Who's driving for Ferrari now? Kim Kardashian's guy? Is he that's the guy. He's doing it now. You're going to get tested a lot this year. By the way, I think I'm the first guy who referred to Lewis Hamilton as Kim Kardashian's guy in the history of sports talk. Kind of probably stands on his own merits. But yes, the Ferrari will be tested this year, John, in a very, very big way, and I'm looking forward to it. Because guess what? If you lose to Texas, it's okay. I mean, it's not okay around here. We'll lose our minds and all of that. But in terms of big picture, it's okay. Things are a little different. You go 10-2, you're in a very comfortable way for Ohio State. And that does change the way we talk about this team and the way that I hope fans view a regular season now. I don't like it. I wish we were back in a BCS or a 4-team or an 8-team, but this thing's going to get bigger before it gets smaller, so we just got to all get used to it.
In regards to the offense, from your mouth to Ryan Day's ears, like I know fans have been clamoring for that for a couple of years. It's like you want to see exactly what they did to Tennessee, exactly what they did to Oregon, and coming right out of the gate and putting them down before halftime, putting a lot of teams that you are significantly more talented than down before you get into the second half. I do wonder, with bringing in Arthur Smith, with the experience they have on the offensive line, like how much they want to establish the run and just grind teams down, especially towards the end of the season. Like, I don't know if it's necessarily going to be the Ferrari going at 180 miles an hour because of what we saw last season where they wanted to make sure everybody was good to go for the 12-team playoff. I hope it's a happy medium.
Well, let's keep the car racing analogy, Reese. Did you guys see F1?
With Brad Pitt?
Yeah.
No.
Man, it's really great.
Yeah.
Really entertaining. At the end of it, it's a story, obviously, about Formula One, which is awesome. It goes through incredible detail of it. At the end of it, he goes and races Baja. I think the Buckeyes are Baja this year. I don't think they're F1. I think it's a little bit of a rougher road, and you're going to need speed, you're going to need strength and brawn and all of it. But I think maybe Baja Buckeyes is maybe the phrase we'll use this year, Bake.
Bo, I'm actually worried about this a lot, quite frankly, because I don't think they're going to change their mindset from the past 2 years. Mm-hmm. I think their mindset from the national championship year with Chip Kelly there to last year was, we need to play as little amount of plays as possible. You mm-hmm. also have 4 returning starters on offense and 2 running backs it sounds like they really, really like. And we know Arthur Smith is a 2 and 3 tight end coach historically on the offensive side of the football. So I don't think this offense is going to look much different than it has the past 2 years. And I don't know if that's good, bad, or indifferent, but I don't think we're going to see a Ferrari. I think we're going to see a Hummer, quite frankly.
Can we do Baja Buckeyes?
I mean, if you want to, we can.
Can we do that? Let's put it on a shirt. We're selling them.
We have a t-shirt store. BreakingT.com/Baja
Buckeyes, and we do like a Baja vehicle in a Buckeye helmet color. Because I think you're right. I picked up on that from Austin. Even Austin said that. Like, people wanting to play faster, they're not. And their approach, I think, will continue to be very NFL-like, which is get up 21 and we're good. I think that's what it's going to be. I prefer 35-0 at half and away we go. But at the same time, like, there's a reason they did it the way they've done it. And, you know, we'll see if it changes at all this year. But my hunch would be that it is not. Finally, one from Snags. Finished Deadwood. He's referring to the HBO series Deadwood, which I think season one is the best season one in the history of television. He writes, I came to the conclusion that I did not complete the series before back in 2023. He was a little inebriated, apparently, the first time he watched it. How historically accurate would you say it is? And I understand in terms of the series, Al Swearengen is the bad guy. I don't see him that way. Alpha, yes, but he lived based on the aspect of this is how we lived back then, right? Because I actually loved him, and a lot of his reaction responses, etc. My favorite bad guy of all TV shows. I think you have the right read on that. Have either of you guys seen Deadwood?
I have not.
Was there a Deadwood movie?
There was, but there were 3 seasons of a TV show first and then a movie.
I think I've tried it a couple times, but it just never stuck.
It's spectacular. The first season is without peer, in my opinion. I don't think Al Swearengen is a bad guy at all in Deadwood. I think it's about survival at that time. And then he wanted us to rank the all-time most likable villains. Al would be at the top of the list for me. But again, I don't think that he necessarily... I think the villain of that show is probably George Hurst. It was incredibly historically accurate. They did take some liberties. I think it was the best written dialogue show I've ever seen. Like, the dialogue on it was every bit as good as anything you saw in Succession. And yes, Snags, I am the one who said I could never cancel my AMC Plus account. I just couldn't do it. They continue to charge me $6 a month. I have no idea how to stop it. I'm the guy. You and I are in the same boat on that, my friend. Mr. Feinbaum in 2 minutes. Bishop and Friends right here on the...
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination. Bishop and Friends present college football's most polarizing figure.
Oh, Bob, let me to me.
Hey, Paul, how you doing? Come on back to our show, Tim. The audience hates you.
This is ESPN's Paul Feinbaum, sponsored by the Roofing Guys. For all your roofing, siding, and gutter needs, contact the Roofing Guys at theroofingguys.com.
Well, buddy, I got to tell you, I am once again envious of you. You wake up on a Thursday and you got a Heisman Trophy winner potentially suing his alma mater. And of course it's at LSU, and of course Kiffin's involved. I think Daniels comes off really silly here in this, but I don't have the total history backdrop that certainly you do. What did you make of this when you saw this morning?
Completely absurd, Bo. And I don't want to diminish what he did at LSU. He won a Heisman Trophy. He has played well in the NFL, but he is not really iconic in the history of LSU. And the main reason is he followed by about 3 years Joe Burrow. And, you know, if Joe Burrow had gotten upset, I would be devastated because there are so many Joe Burrow fans in the state of Louisiana. There really aren't many Jaden Daniels fans. And when I saw the story pop up this morning, I'm like going, that's right. He did play at LSU. It just was very unmemorable because, you know, he had one humongous win there in overtime over Alabama. It helped propel him to the Heisman. They got to the championship, the SEC game, and were terrible. But he played for Brian Kelly, who just got fired. It's just, I mean, Jaden, nobody cares if you ever come back to LSU.
Yeah, seems incredibly petty and obviously unfounded because LSU would own his name, image, and likeness, and everybody knows that. And so the litigation's not going to go anywhere either. So it just seems like such an odd thing. But it does, I think, illustrate one of the really interesting things about that program, Paul, because this is a program that I think that I would have described before Saban was hired as a sleeping giant. I don't know if anybody saw it that way. Maybe you did. I certainly didn't when I was down there. I remember when Saban was hired there thinking, well, that's interesting. And then Saban elevated it. And then they've won national championships with all these different coaches, all of which have very little in common, all of which are just incredible from a just personality standpoint, positively and negatively. What has this two decade plus run at LSU been like for you as a guy who's at a front row seat to it?
Well, first of all, I mean, LSU used to be like A&M, you know, a nice school, great stadium, great tradition, but no real history other than Billy Cannon in 1958 returning a punt on Halloween night. Now, if you're from the South, you know what I just said. If you're sitting there in Ohio, you go, who in the world are we talking about here? It was the most famous play in history because LSU won a national championship and literally did nothing after that until Nick Saban got there. I mean, they've had a run of coaches like Jerry DiNardo and Curly Hallman. I mean, Charlie McClendon, who was actually one of their most famous coaches. I mean, they were punching bag. I think Alabama at one time won something like 18 straight games in Baton Rouge. For all the myth of Tiger Stadium, and then Saban came along and, you know, 2 years into it, won a national championship and really left behind a national championship for Les Miles, who is top five goofy coaches in football history.
All right, I'm going to have you rank them because I'm thinking of myself. You had Les, you had Coach O, then you had Brian, and now you had Kiffin. From a content perspective for you, 1 through 4.
Well, Kiffin owns it. Because I mean, he is the most polarizing coach in the game right now, and really one of the most polarizing in all time. You almost have to go back, 35 years ago to Steve Spurrier getting to Florida, mm-hmm. where and Spurrier was PG compared to Kiffin. And after that, I mean, Coach Ogeron was Ed Ogeron, you know, funny, Cajun all the way. You know, he backed into a national championship with Joe Burrow. It was, listen, you guys all know that story. I don't need to tell you. but there would be a great debate, like who's the worst coach to ever win a national championship? Is it Larry Coker? Is it Coach O? I hate to even say this because he's a good friend of mine, but is it Gene Chizik?
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those. but Ogeron certainly would. I'd give it to Ogeron just to hear the speech.
Yes, the speeches were always great with Ed. Seemed like he had the most fun of all of them, certainly when he was there. All right, let's do some business of the day. We have this meetings on playoff expansion, and we got the Big Ten and the SEC. Then this story gets leaked, I think it was Monday, about a 20-team playoff. Now, this doesn't make me popular around here, but when I saw 20, I said, well, I like 20 more than 24 if that gets rid of conference championship games and we can have play-in games into a 16-team field. I kind of like it. It didn't seem like it got any traction. What did you make of that story getting out there, and is there perhaps a way for that to get back, or are we just inevitably headed to 24?
I don't think we're going to 20. And I don't know all the machinations behind it. It got out, and I know the company I work for was not happy about it. It just got shot down so quickly. And I think that from what I'm told, the people at the CFP meeting were pretty ticked off too, because somebody put it out there as a trial balloon. We're going to 24, but whether we think it's a good idea or not, it's just really a question of how long can Greg Sankey drag this out, and what type of compromise does he get? Meaning, for how many years do we go to 16 before we go to 24?
Yeah, and obviously the company that you work for is going to have, you know, they're going to have their say in it. And look, I had Ross Bjork on Friday in a couple of segments, and we talked to him about it, and it's inevitable, right, that we're going to 24. And sometimes it's pretty as simple as, we watch The Wire, follow the money. They need more revenue, and this is going to supply it. I'm fascinated to see how they make the calendar work and everything else with a 24. I assume the conference championship games go away. But in your neck of the woods, up here, our conference championship game is kind of a ho-hum for the longest time, although last year was a great one because the Big Ten was split so oddly. Down there, I tell people up here all the time, the SEC title game is really, really important to that league. How will Sankey navigate that?
With difficulty, and I'll tell you why. It is a celebration. It is a standalone event because you know it's in Atlanta on that first weekend, and the league has done a fantastic job of making it really something special, and especially since we got rid of CBS, and it's an all-day affair now with mm-hmm. ESPN. But fans are tired of it. The last 2 years, I've walked around that city, and nobody really wanted to be there. And I tell you, the worst thing that happened was Kirby Smart getting knocked out of the playoffs the last 2 years. And the fans of Georgia blaming it on the SEC championship game, losing Carson Beck 2 years ago, which set them up for Notre Dame, and then losing the center and a couple of other players this year, which gave them an excuse to beat Ole Miss, to lose to Ole Miss.
All right, let's stay with Sankey for a second. Saw some reporting I believe it originally was from CBS Sports, that Sankey sent a memo to the coaches saying, on this five-year thing with these super senior things from 2022 on the court ruling, we're going to adhere to the NCAA on this and tread lightly and run all these guys by us. Whether all of that happens or not, who knows? But what I am curious about, and you know him well, how much power and respect does Sankey wield right now in that league?
You're asking me that on the public airwaves?
Tread lightly.
He still has a lot of power, but let me give you an example of a case where it was a lot of that was exposed. It was the Charles Bediako basketball case this year. Mm-hmm. Alabama decided to grab a guy off the Detroit, whatever, in the D-League. A week later, he was playing at Alabama. And Sankey filed an amicus brief with the NCAA, which caused great friction with Greg Byrne, the AD, something that still I don't think has been settled. So I think that was a telltale sign. In the past, no one would have ever gone against the commissioner. The commissioner literally ran the conference. I think Sankey still holds tremendous power. But if a school thinks it can win a game with a player, they're going to disregard the commissioner.
Sometimes it's that simple. Always great talking to you, my friend. We'll do it again soon. Thanks for your time.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, there he goes. Paul Feinbaum, the Paul Feinbaum Show on ESPN and the SEC Network on the Bryan Heating Cooling Systems Fan Guest Hotline. We'll do a little thing or not a thing up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
The Fan weeknights at 6 for the Buckeye Show. And if you're asking if it's just a bunch of homers rooting for all things Ohio State, yes, yes it is. Proud to be your flagship home of the Buckeyes, The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
The Fan Guest Hotline is sponsored by Weston Air Heating and Cooling and Bryant, doing whatever it takes to keep you and your home comfortable. The Fan.
They've all been paid by the Cleveland Browns. This is Bishop and Friends.
All right, time for a little thing and not a thing on a Thursday edition. Hit it, fellas.
Thing or not a thing.
Sponsored by Billiards Plus. Find your next grill and everything you need for the master griller. Billiards Plus on Dublin Center Drive in Dublin.
So the Not Dead Yet Live Golf League will be in Indianapolis next weekend, August 20th through the 23rd. This from British newspaper Sunday Telegraph. Liv's sources are almost resigned that Jon Rahm will leave the league after this season. So it looks like they've just got two more events remaining on their upcoming schedule, or at least two that I can see. Indianapolis and the team championship in Michigan, August 27th through the 30th. Thing or not a thing.
So there's one more part of this, Reese, and that is the DP World Tour, which is the old European Tour. They also put out a statement yesterday that basically said, now or never. Like, we're not, you guys can't play these tournaments anymore unless you come now. So I think that's the other kind of lever to this, is Jon Rahm missed the window to get back on the PGA Tour with minimal punishment. He missed that window. So if he wants to play, like, I guess for lack of a better term, real golf in the traditional sense, the only place left to do it is the DP World. That's it. That's the last place. So if he doesn't go, the way that I read this, and I may be wrong, but the way I just breezed through this with all the football stuff, that basically the time is now to do that. If he doesn't, then he's basically stuck with whatever happens with Liv, and then that's kind of it. So I think that there's a lot going on here. And there's still a lot of guys on that tour, though, that are, they're not big names. I bet Bryson's a big name in like for sports people, casual sports, probably not. So I guess you're going to wait on him a little bit, too. I mean, this thing's hanging on by a thread. But and if Rahm goes, and by the way, he's probably the one whose game suffered the most by going. Was he not number one in the world or close when he left for Liv? And he's never approached that level since.
This is not really a thing to me because I'm done with all this, and I've always thought this was all stupid, the grudges being held and everything. And I have the Players Championship on right now, or the PGA, like the whatever it is, the Tour St. Championship. Jude Championship, yeah. And how much better would this be if Rahm and DeChambeau and Cam Smith and all these guys were in it? Like, I get it. It's been a long time. PGA, just bring these guys back. Just let them come back. It's going to help you. Your ratings are good. They're going to be better if these guys come back and get back to the form they were playing before.
I don't know that the ratings would move at all, Bake. I don't think any of these guys are ratings movers, and I think Liv proved that.
I mean, it's been a minute, so he was... His first number one spot was claimed after July of 2020. He won the Memorial Tournament.
Yeah.
He's accumulated over 50 weeks as the world's number one golfer. He's currently at 13. More from the Sunday Telegraph's reporting. The DP World Tour has reportedly been informed that he plans to leave this season and focus on them and other golf ventures. So does feel like he's trying to make his way back into the good graces of the DP World Tour and certainly the PGA Tour. This comes yesterday, a be careful who your sources are, especially on social media. There's an account, Ben Devine at Chicago _NFL. This got a lot of traction yesterday afternoon.
It did.
And I'm just going to read it. And I don't necessarily take this with any grain of salt, but Ben at Chicago _NFL says breaking. A finalized stadium deal is expected tomorrow with the Chicago Bears landing in Indiana. Per source, Indiana is so heavily incentivizing the deal as to include a name change with Indiana in the team name when the stadium completes. Thing or not a thing?
He furthered this by saying that he had another tweet where he said that the Bears are phasing out the C on the helmet.
It's a G, right? For Gary.
Yeah. I'll tell you this. Whatever vitriol Browns fans have for Art Modell, in the sort of words of Buford T. Justice from Smokey and the Bandit, that's baby stuff alongside of what these dudes are doing. First of all, it's a fan account, so that's the first thing. It's not verified. It's got a check mark because you can buy them now. That's a grain of salt, all of this. I do think there's some smoke here, and it does feel like Indiana is the only place where the Bears are going to be able to find a home where they're going to have somebody that's going to help pay for their stadium, because the McCaskey family does not want to sell part of the Bears, and they do not have the financial ability to build their own stadium on their own, or at least a majority of it, the way that they've done so up in Cleveland with the Browns. They don't have the liquidity. So this gets you to the spot that you're in right now. But I would say, I cannot imagine being the McCaskeys if they're the Indiana Bears. I cannot imagine being Kevin Warren walking the streets of Chicago. I mean, that's like Capone level stuff. I don't buy that at all. I have no belief in all that the Chicago Bears would be the Indiana Bears. They may move them to Indiana. The New York teams play in New Jersey. That works out fine. We've talked about this a lot, that I just never bought that they would leave the Chicagoland area from the standpoint of the majority of your customers are north of the city, and that's going to be a pain in the neck to get south. Pain in the neck. But without selling a portion of the franchise, there's not much the McCaskies can do here because they don't have the ability to do it. So, and the state of Illinois is not going to give them any money, and the city of Chicago is not going to give them any money. So this is kind of the spot they're in, but I think it's about 60,000 bridges too far if they're not the Chicago Bears.
We've talked about this before, that the Gary, Indiana site's actually closer to downtown Chicago than the Arlington Heights site.
Yeah.
But you also mentioned a majority of their fans are more up towards the Arlington Heights area. They might be moving to Indiana, but there's no way they're changing the name from Chicago Bears. And there's no way they're taking the C off of the helmet. And if this report were true, this would be the most Kevin Warren thing ever. But you're right. Oh. They'd have to move. If the McCaskey family lives in Chicago still, they'd have to vacate and they could never come back.
Never come back. No. And the NFL wouldn't allow it. There's just no way Roger Goodell would sit by side and allow them to be the Indiana Bears. I mean, they're just... Aren't they the oldest franchise in the NFL? Them or the Cardinals?
I was about to say, if they're not the, they're one of, certainly.
I'm pretty sure it's them. It's them or the Cardinals. And the Cardinals, of course, started in Chicago.
I wanted to ask, what would be the financial incentive for the Chicago Bears to change the name to the Indiana Bears or to the Gary Bears? Like, $20 billion? Like, what's the dollar amount they could get?
I would say, let's play the game.
Yeah.
We'll pay for the full stadium. So, state of Indiana, which, by the way, how the hell is the governor of Indiana selling that to the taxpayers of Indiana? We're going to pay for the whole stadium. So $4 billion or whatever it is for a stadium. We'll pay $4 billion for the stadium. You'll pay nothing. And you can keep all the revenue from it. That would be the deal. That it would take that. You get all revenue.
Or
by the way, Chicagoland native fish. No one thinks Northwest Indiana is Chicagoland except for people who live in Northwest Indiana. I've had lacrosse tournaments in the northern suburbs, and you can't get south. It takes you 2 hours to go from Gary to northern suburbs. There's just no way to get through it. This is a crazy thing. I'm sure most Chicago Bears... Look, Mike's from Chicago, AR's from Chicago, Fish is from Chicago. We got a lot of good Chicago representation. Like, I'd be very curious to hear... my guess is all of them want them to sell the Bears to somebody who can pay for it themselves. I mean, isn't the governor of Illinois a billionaire? Isn't he one of the Hyatt billionaire guys? I think I'm right on all this. Or maybe I'm making it all up. But I think the governor of Illinois is part of the Hyatt billionaire thing. I think I'm right on that.
You are, yeah. JB Pritzker is an heir to the Hyatt Hotel fortune. Yeah.
Sell to that family and then build your own stadium. Hyatt Stadium.
With an attached Hyatt. There you go.
There we go. Done. Sell it.
To your point about the NFL franchises, Cardinals, Bears, 1920, Packers, 21, Giants, 1925, Detroit Lions, 1930.
Let me ask you this. The Lakers just sold for $12.5. What are the Bears worth? This is an NFL iconic franchise in a massive market that they have entirely to themselves. And I've heard Fish say this. I've heard buddies of mine who are from Chicago say this. I remember doing an internship with Mark Giangreco, who's a sports guy in Chicago years ago. He said this, and he said, no matter how good Jordan and the Bulls are, this is a Bears town. It's a Bears town. That was a long time ago, but I assume that's still the case. What are the Bears worth, even with this stadium problem hanging over them? They got to be worth $12 billion.
Yeah.
It's interesting because the Lakers are such a brand, but so are the Bears, and the Bears are an NFL team, so you would think you would get more for the Bears.
Yes. Sell the team.
Sportico says $9.45 billion.
okay, so sell them for an $11 billion valuation mm-hmm. and let the Pritzker family or somebody or some private equity group buy part of it. And you could still keep a minority share to keep the Hallis McCaskey name on it. And then they can build their own stadium that they can actually afford. I mean, come on, have some common sense. There's got to be some. Final hour of the program coming up next. Bishop and Friends right here.
Listing live from the McDaniel GM Superstore Studios. Driving excellence since 1916. Chevrolet. Together, let's drive. WBNS HD1 Columbus.
Good morning. I'm Eric Reeser. Ohio State football is 23 days out from hosting Ball State Saturday, September 5th. Buckeyes continue fall camp today with the 7th of 25 preseason practices. Defensive coordinator Matt Patricia will meet with the media following practice this morning. In the NFL tonight, the Bengals begin the preseason hosting the Lions at 7. Cincinnati's Zach Taylor says Joe Burrow, Jamar Chase, and T. Higgins will see limited action against Detroit. Saturday in Chicago, the Browns battle the Bears. Cleveland will start Deshaun Watson this week. Shedeur Sanders gets the nod next Saturday. Todd Monken says the team is still working through a quarterback competition. You can hear Browns preseason football on The Fan with coverage Saturday at 1 o'clock. And we've got day baseball in the Arena District. The Clippers host the Storm Chasers at 12:05. In Detroit, the Guardians play the Tigers at 1:10. The Reds are in Chicago versus the White Sox at 2:10. This update is sponsored by Germain Toyota for unbeatable service and sales. Visit Germain Toyota on the corner of I-70 and Bryce Road or online at germaintoyota.net.
Sports conversation that's worthy of a toast, or at least a stiff drink. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
All right, final hour on a Thursday. Nate Davis, USA Today, going to join us in 28 minutes from now, has his predictions for the season out. Preseason, full slate tonight. Thursday games. We'll get into the Bengals and the Steelers and take a look at the slate coming up in about 15 minutes from now. We do start the hour, though, with what Mr. Reeser there just mentioned, that the Cleveland Browns have announced who will start their preseason opener. They actually did it themselves. Like, this wasn't scooped, nothing. They just put it out on social, and Deshaun Watson is going to start the preseason opener on Saturday in a game you can hear right here on The Fan against the Bears. Shedeur Sanders will start the team's second preseason game at home against the Bills. That will be on October 22nd. Monk informed the coaches of this after practice on Wednesday. So the way it's working up there right now, Monken is talking before practice, the quarterback players talk before practice, and then after practice, there's no availability until the next day. So the next time you will hear Todd Monken talk about this will be post-game Saturday in Chicago. They are traveling to Chicago today, doing like a team meal on tonight in Chicagoland, and then they'll have their walkthrough and all that stuff on Friday and then play the game Saturday. So no availability for the Browns between now and that opener. If you've been listening to what I've been saying, this should not surprise you. Right? I've been talking about Deshaun Watson and the offseason that he has had in comparison to the people he's competing against. He has been the better of the group. That's been something that happened through the summer. That's happening through camp. I mean, I've seen all of it. And so that's the way that it goes. I also don't think that this is necessarily in any way saying that Todd Monken is saying that Deshaun Watson is going to be the starter for week one. It's just that he's going to start the first game of the preseason and Shedeur is going to start the second game of the preseason against Buffalo. The one, as I've been saying all along, to really watch is the Thursday practice a week from today, which will be in Cleveland, the joint practice between the Bills and the Browns. That's when you will know really where their head's at on the quarterback side of things, because that is the most valuable good on good work that you're going to get. And the reason for that is Saturday in Chicago, we have no idea what Ben Johnson's going to do with the Bears starters. No idea. My hunch is he won't play him. So you could have an instance where Watson and a lot of the Browns ones are playing a half of football. And I think that's the plan. You're going to hear from Todd in a second, playing about a half of football. And the Bears are playing with twos and threes. The same thing could happen the following week for Shedeur against Buffalo. If he's out there with the Browns ones and the Bills are like, I mean, there's no way Josh Allen's playing. Nobody needs to see that. So there's going to be a whole bunch of guys that'll bubble wrapped on both teams. So I think that's why that Thursday practice is the one that is the most important. So Todd Monken was asked yesterday, and again, this was before it was announced publicly that it would be Deshaun and then Shedeur. He did kind of lay out his plan for the next couple of weeks for the two quarterbacks. Let's have a listen.
I mean, we're going to see both of them. I mean, one's going to start this week. Okay. And one's going to start next week, right? And we're going to play about a
Somewhere I'd like to see a quarterback play a half and get a two-minute. We're going to do everything we can to try and get a two-minute, right? Simulate that for the half, and we're going to try to do the exact same thing the next week.
Why one for Chicago and the other? I mean, which one?
You have to pick. I got to pick somebody. Yeah. So I have my reasons. I have my reasons of how it's going to go, and it's not – I mean, it's still a competition. We're still excited to watch guys practice today, let alone, you know, on Saturday and then next week against Buffalo. And we'll get a chance to see them both.
Yesterday's practice was a Shador practice. Shador was available before practice. And one of the things, Shador's certainly aware of this, one of the things around Shador is a lot of the social media, especially commentary around him. And this we talked about this, I think, on Tuesday. Some of it comes from like legitimate former NFL players who are just wildly off on all of it. A lot of it comes from fans. Shador was asked about, you know, some of that dialogue and pretty candid answer. Let's have a listen.
No, I don't think with the coaches that we have, you ever wonder. I think whatever is said is direct. Obviously, it's like we was informed, you know, and everything the right way. So it was never a miscommunication between us, you know. I just don't really appreciate sometimes if things happen and if things happen and y'all just jump on the coach like he just tripping or something, you know. I don't really like that because it creates just extra. And I hope we all here to want to win, you know, and be a team and be a franchise. So it's kind of like we got to slow down, you know, if that's what we want. But if we just in here to just make money and get clicks, then, you know, we understand that too. So that's why I just appreciate the team. I appreciate everybody that we don't let anything online or anything really get to us, you know, because we're in our own cocoon. We're a team. So anything outside of that don't really affect us in the building.
Look, it's the good for Shador, I think, for saying that part out loud, that he doesn't appreciate all the nonsense around it. The reality is that Shador Sanders, and we did this, I think, on Tuesday when we led the show with us, just kind of the way that this has all been covered, not necessarily by the beat, but just people around it. And one of the things that is undeniable is that Shador Sanders is incredibly popular with the fan base. He is. Another thing that's undeniable is that from the franchise's standpoint, just like take your thoughts about who you like there, doesn't take all that out of it. It would be a layup and a lottery ticket if Shador Sanders were good, let alone great. He's a fifth round pick. He's under team control. Deshaun Watson, the path is much, much more difficult, let alone, you know, just from a fan base perspective, not having the popularity that Shador has. But beyond that, he is a free agent next summer. So if he does get back to the player that he was, or some version of that, 80% of that, which might be enough to win the job. If he gets back to that, because that's how good he was at one point, then they're going to have to figure out how to keep him as a member of the franchise. And that's much more complicated. Or I guess they could choose to let him go too. But I mean, that would be pretty interesting if he had a great year and then he walked. So I think it's much more complicated with Watson. The last thing I'll say on this in terms of the way that this is playing out is Todd Monken, it's clean slate, man. He's going to play the best guy, and he's going to play the guy who gives him the best chance to win. And if that is Deshaun Watson, then it's because he gives them the best chance to win, simple as that. If there's a conspiracy going one way or the other, if anything, it would be for Shador against Deshaun because of everything that I just laid out. So that's, we have to apply a little bit of common sense to all of this. Watson was available yesterday as well, and he was asked if he can be the player he was in Houston. He gave an interesting answer.
I'm different, man. I think ever since I've been here, you know, early on, I think, you know, bringing up Houston was, you know, cool. But, you know, I'm 30 now, so I think, you know, I had some injuries and things like that, so my game has definitely changed. But the mentality and how I play and what I, you know, how I approach it doesn't. So I don't know. I think just going out there and just playing free and let my, you know, instinct just take over, you know. So I think that's the biggest thing. And, you know, I've always had a coach, you know, my coach O'Brien always told me, you know, I always trust my instinct. So, you know, I think that's the biggest thing, is just go out there, play free, and let the game come to me.
Yeah, both guys had good practices yesterday. Shador went with the ones. He had a great throw later in practice to Isaiah Bond down the sideline that was among the better throws and catches that we've seen in camp. Actually had pretty good coverage, too. Deshaun ripped a couple in the middle of the practice that looked really good down the field. I mentioned this several times. Since last Wednesday, Deshaun's been different. He's been throwing the ball down the field, and his arm is significantly stronger than Shador's. He tests it sometimes. He had a pretty bad interception. I want to say it was Wednesday. Was it yesterday? It might have been yesterday. He had a bad interception where he's trying to force it into some traffic, and it just wasn't there. But then he had five straight passes that were passes that you have to have his arm to be able to complete. So how this plays out is going to be, I think, told next Thursday, guys. That's when you'll know. Like, whoever gets those number one reps against Buffalo, that's how you're going to know how they're going to start this year.
But in the meantime, you've still got to give them, I think, the equal opportunity. And this makes all the sense in the world where he would go one guy this week, the other guy next week, and then you figure it out. I would hope that if he knows, or if he leans one way now, I say just rip the Band-Aid off. But again, I'm also going to clean slate with Monken because none of this roster, or at least a 90% of the roster, was given to him. And mm-hmm. So I think the patience should be there from Browns fans for whatever this looks like this season, with largely an eye on 2027 and a quarterback taken in that draft. And so I think for him right now, you're looking to do whatever you can to get out of that 3-4-5 win hole to at least show that there's improvement on the rest of the roster. And the best, absolute best case scenario is the one you laid out with Shador Sanders. You can bring him back into camp next season. But I just think that he's going about it the absolute best way he possibly can right now.
I got to tell you, I've said all along that I think Deshaun is going to be this quarterback, and I still do. And I kind of wanted him to be because I thought he gave my team the best chance to win. That answer he just gave about maybe I'm reading too much into it, I hate it. Because that's, to me, a guy that's doubting himself. And I maybe you're not as athletic, but you've gained experience, so you should... I mean, you should have full confidence to say that, yeah, I can get back to that. And that's a guy who doesn't sound like he thinks he can. And I think that's a problem to me.
I don't think that's what he was saying, Bake.
That's how I took it.
I know. And I think a lot of people took it that way. But if you listen to his full press conference, I don't think he was saying I can't be the player I was. I think he's saying you got to stop asking me about it. It was a long time ago.
Then say stop asking me about it.
Agreed, but I think that's what he's referring to is that was so long ago. Like, I'm a new guy now. I'm 30 years old. I'm married. I'm this. I'm that. I think what he's trying to do, and you listen to, I'm assuming you cut this. It was a pretty good press conference that he had, and he had it for a long time and answered a lot of the stuff, explained some of the interceptions and all of that. I think where he's at is clean slate across the board. And I think what he was going for with that answer was, you can't, please stop asking me about Houston. It was so long ago. That's my read on it. What I see from him playing is very similar to what he was. I'm not saying he's going to be as good as he was in Houston, but the way that he's going about his business and practice, like, they have a lot of the Lamar Jackson run stuff is in for him. When he plays, they run it, and he looks like how he looked. So I think that's what he was going for. You're not alone in that, by the way. A lot of people had the read that you had on it.
I hope he instills more confidence in his team than he just did me.
Yeah. I think a lot of people had that read of what he was saying. I think what he was going for was, you got to stop asking me about Houston. It was so long ago is probably what he was going for. But here's the deal. If he's great Saturday, then it's possible this changes.
Yeah, I don't care what he says. Play.
If he plays well Saturday, then it's possible that this thing's done and Shador won't get his chance. And that's the whole point of the NFL. This is professional football. The best player is going to play. If he struggles, then I think you're going to see a lot of Shador Sanders on Thursday against Buffalo. Because in practice, Deshaun has been slightly ahead of Shador in practice. But can he bring that to a game on Saturday? We'll see. And you'll be able to listen as you're driving around right here on The Fan. Full slate of preseason action tonight. Get you set for that. Coming up next, Bishop and Friends right here.
Fan have created a show where you can be a homer, a hater, or whatever you want to be. Sunday mornings at 8.
It's The Fan Call-In Show, presented by The Sportsbook at Hollywood Casino Columbus.
Must be 21. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-589-9966.
Fan weather.
From the Logan AC and Heat Services Weather Center.
We'll see a partly cloudy sky for the rest of the day. Watching for a chance of showers and a few thunderstorms to arrive toward the evening hours out of the west. Otherwise, it'll be a humid afternoon with highs in the mid-80s. Chance of scattered showers and thunderstorms overnight could be a localized downpour with lows around 70. For the day tomorrow, chance of showers and storms mainly in the morning, otherwise partly to mostly cloudy and 82. For The Fan, I'm 10 Weather Impact meteorologist Justin Gertz.
Miss a little, miss a lot. Catch Bishop and Friends wherever you get your podcasts. It's free.
Sponsored by Atlas Butler Heating, Cooling, and Plumbing.
The Fan. The uncle you never knew you had. The friends you kind of wish you didn't. This is Bishop and Friends.
Indeed it is. You know, we were... Here's the thing that's tricky. If you are... If you're Todd Monken, if you are Deshaun and Shador and the organization and all of these things, and we talk about this all the time in regard to sports, of you kind of want, you want to all be rowing in the same direction. And they definitely have that up there. Everybody's rowing in the same direction. But there's also, you know, kind of the fan side of it. And you guys are both Browns fans, and I work for the Browns. And so there is also kind of seeing the big picture. And I've talked to Nathan Zger about this a lot, and I wasn't with the organization at the time when they won one game in 2 years. But I remember saying, well, that worked. That did work. That netted them the number one pick in the draft where they could pick the quarterback that they wanted. And it came down to Baker Mayfield and Josh Allen, and John Dorsey, who's a damn good personnel man, went with Baker Mayfield. And he went with Baker because of what he saw from him from an accuracy standpoint, what he saw from him from a leadership, face of the franchise standpoint. And that was the decision that he made. And by the way, Baker Mayfield was not a bust, is not a bust. He continues to be an NFL starting quarterback. It didn't work out the way that he or they wanted in Cleveland. There's a billion reasons why that happened. But he has had, credit to him, rejuvenated his career in Tampa. And was compensated richly and now may be able to play himself into being compensated richly again. Is Baker Mayfield a true blue franchise quarterback? No, probably not in the sense of, is he an elevator? And when you draft number one overall, that's what you want. You want someone who's going to elevate a franchise. And Baker elevated it to a point, but then kind of hit a concrete ceiling in the similar spot that they're in down in Tampa with him. Conversely, you know, had it been Allen, could Josh Allen have survived all of that? I remember now, Baker's first year, Hugh Jackson got fired, what, a quarter of the way through it? And Todd Haley on the same day. And then it was Freddie Kitchens, and then they got Stefanski, and then Stefanski stabilized things. And so the quarterback position is always going to be very, very tricky. And so we look at these things. Oh, here's the point I was going to make on the 1-31. In football, unlike basketball and baseball, not putting your best foot forward to win hurts physically. There's a beating that comes with it as a player. There's a pound of flesh, if you will, that comes with it as a player. Not only is it not fun, but physically it takes a massive toll. And it's one of those things that it's hard to kind of get over it. And many organizations have proved that you don't have to. If you're pretty savvy, you can kind of get these things kind of sorted out. You can luck into it the way that the Bears did, where they were in a position where they had the number one pick, but they still kind of believed in Justin Fields. So they got a king's ransom for Bryce Young, who, by the way, was pretty good last year for Carolina. But Chicago ended up with all of this talent and Caleb Williams, all of it. And now they're in a position to be, you know, one of the bright young franchises going forward. What do you guys want the Browns to be in 2026? How would you define a successful season for them? Because Reese, you mentioned it's all about the 27 draft and a quarterback. Well, in order to get the one that you want, you're going to have to be pretty bad. Like, who's signing up for that?
Certainly not Browns fans for the most part. I think there's just that at least from my vantage point, there's an acceptance in what this is going to be. There's always going to be a portion of the fan base that's hopeful, you know, that Deshaun maybe returns to some form that he had in Houston, or that Shador Sanders is finally going to, you know, silence the haters and the doubters. I think this looks like a 5-12 season where you're competitive in all 17 games, where it goes down to field goals against the Steelers, where it goes down to poor turnovers, against the Cincinnati Bengals, and you're still able to battle with Joe Burrow and keep a game competitive, where you're not looking at December and sitting there going, well, they've just been blown out, and games in Cleveland where they get their asses kicked by teams from warm weather states. You know, I think as long as you're able to put together respectable performances week to week and you can continue to give that fan base hope instead of just be dead entering the final month of the season.
So I've flipped my opinion on this a little bit in the past couple of years. And I don't think this Browns roster is a roster that needs to be torn down to the studs. I think this is a roster that's a pretty good roster. There's no guarantee, and I like Dante Moore a lot. There's no guarantee Dante Moore is a quality starting NFL quarterback. There's no guarantee that Arch Manning is a quality starting NFL quarterback. So I want the Browns to win as many games as they can this year. I want the Browns to be in the playoffs. Do I think that's happening? No, unfortunately, I don't think that's happening, but I want them to be 10-7 this year and get in the playoffs. And then I'll take, if drafting a quarterback is what you need, it sounds like maybe a Julian Sain will be in that range. And I think Julian Sain has just as good a shot as an Arch Manning or a Dante Moore to be good. Brendan Sorsby will be available. Do I think he's the guy? No, I don't. But you can take your flyer on a quarterback then, or we've seen the retread projects in the NFL now, and it works. Do you go get a Mac Jones, or do you go get a Daniel Jones, or whoever somebody's going to give up on too soon? So there's ways to get your quarterback. I would rather see them win than tank, because I don't think they're a team that's rostered so bad they need to.
I'll tell you this, Bake, then you're going to like your coach. Because Todd Monken, he's not up there for anything other than what
I
you
think
just
he's said. He's the right guy.
He's not up there for anything other than what you just said. He is going to put everything that he has into winning in 2026. And his view of who plays and who doesn't is entirely predicated on who gives them the best chance to win. That's it. So whichever one of these quarterbacks does it, that's who's going to win the job in his mind. Whoever does that wins the job. And so I tend to be, I'm certainly more with you. And I think the best example, and Reese, you're in the same boat. I think you're in a situation where you say to yourself, look at what just happened in Seattle. Be in a position where either via draft or via trade or via free agency, you're in a position to have a roster that somebody wants to play on and can be paratrooped into. And that can be via draft, that can be via trade, via free agency. There's a lot of ways that you can do it. Almost never happens in free agency unless it's like the Darnold situation, which happened. The Baker situation in Tampa, which happened. Daniel Jones in Indy, which happened. By the way, he got a second contract. Like, this is becoming more and more regular, and my hunch is that's what they're going for. This is a much more talented offensive team than they've had in the last 4 or 5 years. I've been saying all along, it's the most talented offensive skill position team they've had since Chubb and Odell and Jarvis and Hoop and Chief and Kareem. It's on that level of overall talent. So the quarterback's going to have some weapons to work with. But furthermore, if none of these guys are the long-term answer, then it's going to be a place that I think people are going to want to play. And furthermore, you're going to have a dome stadium coming in 2029, so that only enhances it more. There's a lot of examples of how hard it is in the NFL draft at quarterback. We're going to get to that in 2 minutes. Also get you set on what is a full slate of NFL preseason action tonight. Bishop and Friends right here. On the
favorite fan shows are available when you want them.
Head to 971thefan.com and hit that subscribe button.
The Fan, Ohio sports destination. First Friday miracles are always better with Uncle Bo. This is Bishop and Friends.
It's really amazing when you guys, when you look at this, guys, on first round picks. Bakey made the point on Dante Moore. Here, go back to 2000. You could do this forever, but go back to 2013. I'm going to read off first round draft pick quarterbacks through the years. 2013, just one, EJ Manuel. 2014, first round picks, three of them. Blake Bortles, Johnny Manziel, Teddy Bridgewater. So far, 0 for 4 on franchise. 2015 first-round picks, two of them, Jameis Winston, Marcus Mariota. That's 6 for 6, not franchise quarterbacks. 2016, Jared Goff, Carson Wentz, and Paxton Lynch. Goff's a franchise quarterback. The other two are not. So that's 8 non-1 franchise, although for a different team.
Denver loved 6'7" quarterbacks, didn't they, for a while there?
They really did. So that's 1-8. Okay, one franchise quarterback, 8 not. In 2017, Mitchell Trubisky, Patrick Mahomes, Deshaun Watson. Two of those guys are franchise quarterbacks. Watson was obviously in Houston. Mahomes is. Trubisky was not. So it's 3-9. Three franchises, 9 not. 2018, Baker, Sam Darnold, Josh Allen, Josh Rosen, Lamar Jackson. Good night, nurse. Two bona fide gold jackets in there. So that's 5 of them. Sam Darnold may play his way into it. I mean, he's a Super Bowl champion now, so I think that's 6. You got to give him one. Baker probably is too. He's a franchise quarterback, not a champion, but a franchise quarterback. So what's that get us to? 7 to 10? 10 non, 7 in? I think I'm doing this right. 2019, Kyler Murray, Daniel Jones, Dwayne Haskins. May he rest in peace, sweet Simba, unfortunately. But of that list, probably none.
Yeah, none right now, I would say.
No. So 7 and 13. 13 nons. 2020, Burrow, Tua, Herbert, Love. Three feel like it. I guess the jury's still out on Love, but Burrow and Herbert are. Tua probably not. I think, so maybe 2-2?
I think Love is, as of right now. I would think, barring injury,
similar.
He's going to be in Green Bay for the next 8 to 10
fair.
Years.
That's fair. Well, this one's a doozy. 2021, Trevor Lawrence, yes. Zach Wilson, no. Trey Lance, no. Justin Fields, no. Mac Jones, no. Four no's in 2021 as of right now. Mac can rehabilitate. We'll see. It's hard to believe that Justin could at this point. He's been given a lot of opportunities and it just hasn't worked. 2022, Kenny Pickett, nope. 2023, Bryce Young, CJ Stroud, Anthony Richardson, two yeses, although... I mean, Bryce was benched to start last year before getting it turned in the right direction. And then CJ Stroud, obviously, they still haven't given him a second contract yet.
I don't know if I consider Bryce Young a franchise quarterback guy yet.
I think it's trending that way and that he led him to the playoffs. But yes, I think that's fair. Richardson, no. I mean, I lost track, but it's obviously overwhelming. Here's another one. This is another five banger. Caleb Williams, this is 2024. Caleb Williams, yes. Jaden Daniels, felt like yes. Drake May, yes. Michael Penix, feels like no. J.J. McCarthy, no. I mean, he's going to be on another team. He might be one of those guys who ends up on another team next year. Bo Nix, yes. Fair? 2025, mm-hmm. Cam Ward and Jackson Dart, jury's still out.
You don't know.
Don't know. And then this last year, Mendoza and Simpson. Why is this so hard? This is a billion-dollar question. Why is this so damn hard to look at a college player and see if it can translate to the NFL? And this is all sorts of teams that have tried this, drafted multiple first-round pick quarterbacks in some instances, and miss. How much is it on evaluation? How much of it is on the situations that they land in? How much of it is, I mean, those are the two on the individual. It's probably most on situation and evaluation.
Yeah, I'd even lean situation. Certainly with Baker coming in, like that was just not a great place to grow from a college quarterback into the NFL. Like to prepare him to play, read defenses, all of that. And that's, I think, the prevailing for me thing that's happened with the Browns with quarterbacks they've taken since coming back in 1999 was I think the talent's been there. I think evaluators have looked and seen from their college tape really good quarterback can be molded into something great. And once they get there, the situation just blows up in their face. Or whatever happens, if coaches don't get along with the quarterback, or however chaotic things have been since Tim Couch, I think for every franchise, it's different. Mm-hmm. I think, I keep thinking like Kenny Pickett's just like ringing in the front of my head, where so many people thought like that's the guy, like the evaluation. The Pittsburgh Steelers, absolutely no doubter. But then it obviously fell apart, where he's starting a Hall of Fame game, you know, in 2026.
Mm-hmm.
So I think every individual franchise has more of a prevailing evaluation versus situation. But I think it's a healthy, unhealthy, in this case, mix of both.
I think the game of football has gotten so fast and so nuanced in some ways that you can be really good
mm-hmm.
in college. But even that difference from college to the NFL is so great that you just have to process things so quickly and make decisions so fast. There's very few that can do it. And I think of like Justin Fields, and so many times when he played at Ohio State, his team was so much better than the other team that he had more time maybe than he does in the NFL. And you maybe could wait a split second in college, but you can't in the NFL. And you've just got to trust it and see it and pull the trigger. And I think there's only so many guys that can process that in their head so fast that they can do it in the NFL at a high level.
Well, I think that's what you just said is a big problem of a lot of these quarterbacks at Blue Bloods. Because I'm curious if this changes as the talent has been more evenly distributed by NIL and by free transfer. But for the time that I just went over that, for the majority of that time, most of the talent was kind of on, 10 programs in the country? Maybe 10 had most of the talent?
Yeah, probably something close.
You know, I mean, it's LSU, it's Georgia, it's Alabama out of the SEC, Texas, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, Oregon. I mean, you could do it pretty easily. Yeah, I mean, good Lord, you could just do it out of two conferences, kind of, if you wanted to. You could just do Big Ten and SEC and just say the amount of talent out of those two conferences. But even within those conferences, it was kind of hijacked by just a few teams. So I think that's a big part of it is, you know, Ohio State Open versus NFL Open. Alabama Open versus NFL Open. And every once in a while, you get a Joe Burrow where it doesn't matter. Like for Joe, it didn't matter. Joe had maybe the best receiving core for that year in the history of college football, and didn't matter. He transferred perfectly to the NFL. He had the work ethic, he had the arm, he had the talent, he had all of the things, the necessary athleticism, the mind, all of it to make it work. There's other instances, though, too, and I think I always thought that one of the great coaching jobs, one of the most humble coaching jobs of all time was John Harbaugh. When they drafted Lamar Jackson, people forget this. John Harbaugh was a lame duck coach. He did not, at the time they drafted Lamar Jackson, I'm pretty sure I have this right, he did not have a contract extension. And they had Joe Flacco, and they drafted Lamar Jackson. And they inserted Jackson in, I think, halfway through that rookie year. And John Harbaugh had a choice. He saw the future in Lamar Jackson, and they could either stay with what they were doing with Flacco, or he could roll the dice on the future with Lamar Jackson. And John Harbaugh went all in, and he hired an offensive staff to take full advantage of all of the things Lamar Jackson did and build an offense around his skill set. He did it with several coaches and then elevated it with what they did with Monken, where Lamar really had one of the greatest seasons in the history of football. And it was actually the year he didn't win the MVP. He should have. It was a stupefying season that he had with Todd Monken. I think too many times these coaches are hired for their offensive acumen, and they're not malleable enough for the player that they have at the position. It's critical, in my view, that you build something around the skill set of the player. This isn't in college where you decide who you're going to recruit as 16 years old, 17, whatever, earlier than that, 15, 16-year-old, and you built a recruiting profile and you recruit to this position type. One thing that we've seen at Ohio State with Ryan is Ryan wanted a more pro-style quarterback. I mean, he started to recruit more pro style quarterbacks, starting with CJ, and then they kind of followed that way. Now, there's going to be guys down the road that are going to be a little bit different, but I think you're certainly drafting to a style. You're recruiting to a style. In the NFL, there's not enough of that. There's too many guys who want to do round peg, square hole. And if you're looking for the apex example of this, it's probably San Francisco. You know what Kyle Shanahan wants out of a quarterback? He wants you to be able to turn your back to the defense. He wants every single play to look exactly the same. He wants you to turn your back to the defense and throw it to somebody who he has schemed open without thought. He is schemed open. Throw it. That's what he wants. He gave up his draft for a guy who played a season of 1AA football. He gave up his draft for a season, a guy who played a season of NFL of college football at 1AA in Trey Lance. And he stumbled into Brock Purdy. Brock Purdy fit what Kyle Shanahan wanted all along. But he was in love with the traits of Trey Lance, so much so that he picked him. And honestly, if they don't land Purdy at the back of that draft, probably him nor John Lynch are still there. They're probably both out. Purdy lands with them with the last pick of the draft, and Purdy had all of the traits that Kyle Shanahan wanted to run an offense. That's how stupid all this is. It's just dumb luck. It's just utter dumb luck. And sometimes you get it right, and sometimes you don't. And when you get it right, it's a lottery ticket and you're set up. We get you three things on a Thursday up next. Bishop and Friends right here on the
OC Football Training Camp Report.
This report is brought to you statewide by Safe Light Auto Glass and Bob's Discount Furniture. Last year, Ohio State tight ends combined for 746 yards and 6 touchdowns, while Max Clair and Will Kaczmarek became the program's first tight end duo to be picked in the same NFL draft. This year's group includes Northwestern transfer Hunter Welsing, Ohio transfer Mason Williams, redshirt senior Bennett Christian, and sophomore Nate Roberts, who said this year's unit could be just as good as the last.
We're just as deep, I think, maybe even deeper. Just we got 5-6 guys that can go out there and play. We're very deep going into this fall camp, so I think that will help us out so much going into the season, especially later in the season when obviously injuries happen. So knock on wood, that doesn't happen. But if that does happen, we got 5 guys that can definitely go out there and play.
We'll have more after this.
Bob's Discount Furniture has the furniture you've waited 250 years for. We've got power reclining sofas as low as $7.99, 5-piece dining sets as low as $3.99, Bob-O-Pedic mattresses for as low as $2.99, and of course, feature-packed bestsellers like my Playday sectional with pop-up sleeper sofa. So stop in or shop mybobs.com to see where America shops for furniture.
Oh, my Bob!
Bob's Discount Furniture, proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
Hi, this is Paul Keels. This Buckeye season, don't let a broken windshield ruin your game plan. Safe Light Auto Glass makes it easy to get your windshield fixed with their mobile glass shops all over Central Ohio. They can come to you anywhere, giving Buckeye fans more time for game time. OH? Man, I love that. Schedule at SafeLight.com. Safe Light Auto Glass is a proud sponsor of Ohio State Athletics.
You previously heard sophomore tight end Nate Roberts talk about the potential of this year's tight end room. He also praised the versatility of the group.
I think we just got dudes that can play both positions. Maybe like we got dudes that can play that inline and both kind of hipped. So just the versatility that we have in this room is very, very good overall. So we're looking forward to the season for sure.
Roberts and the tight ends get to learn from offensive coordinator Arthur Smith, who coached tight ends in the NFL for 4 years with the Tennessee Titans.
He's definitely helping the tight end out a lot in the run game and the pass game. So he's kind of got our back. That's kind of what we've been saying. So he's done a great job with us and trying to give us the ball as much as we can and help us out in the run game.
Smith is in his first fall camp as Ohio State's offensive coordinator. The season opener for the Buckeyes is September 5th versus Ball State. We'll have another report tomorrow. This is Tyler Danberg on the Ohio State Sports Network from Learfield.
Are you ready to sail Buckeye Nation? Join us February 19th to February 26th, 2027, as we celebrate the 20th anniversary of the Buckeye Cruise for Cancer out of Barbados on the Silver Sea, Silver Ray. Meet more than 35 Buckeye greats plus some of your favorite current Buckeyes, all while making memories and helping beat cancer. You don't want to miss this ultimate Buckeye fan experience. We can't wait to see you on board. Let's celebrate 20 years of making a difference. Visit BuckeyeCruise.com for more information.
Paul Keels here, voice of the Ohio State Buckeyes. You have to check out the brand new AAA Buckeyes MVP membership. Get all the benefits of AAA, such as 24/7 roadside assistance, plus chances to win tickets to Buckeye sporting events, access to exclusive MVP experiences, along with 10% off gear at the Ohio State Team Shop. Already a AAA member? Add the Buckeye MVP membership upgrade for free. Head to AAA.com/Buckeyes to join the squad and put your fandom in drive.
On this episode,
Bishop and Friends is sponsored by Diamond Seller, your true jeweler for almost 80 years. The Fan, Ohio's sports destination.
If you say something with enough confidence, it must be true. You're listening to Bishop and Friends.
Homes in Columbus know that August brings those aggressive yellow jackets and wasps. Don't wait for an invasion. Protect your property and family with Rose Pest Solutions Home Service Program. The Rose Home Service Program provides year-round protection for one flat annual fee with regularly scheduled visits. Rose is local, family-owned, and trusted by your neighbors in Ohio for over 165 years. Get peace of mind today. Call 800-966-ROSE or visit rosepestsolutions.com. What do we have in the poll today, Reese?
Daily Fan Poll sponsored by JT's Pizza and Pub. It asks, who will be the second leading receiver for the Ohio State Buckeyes this season? Your options are Brandon Ennis, Chris Henry Jr., Devin McCuen, or someone else. Looks like 33% have Devin McCuen and Brandon Ennis. 29% say Chris Henry Jr., and then just north of 3% say someone else.
Who you got?
I'm going to say Chris Henry Jr.
Yep, I've said it all along. I'm sticking with it. I think 15 is number two.
I'm going to go B.I. I'm going to go B.I. as number two leading receiver on this. We'll see. But I think all those guys are going to be in the mix. And good Lord, did McCuen leave an impact, right? Great practice on a Friday, and everybody saw it, and holy smokes.
Who would have said that last week at this time?
No, he wouldn't have been on a poll a week ago at this time. Crazy. Life comes at you fast. Time for three things on a Thursday. Hit it, fellas.
One, two, three things.
Sponsored by Newman Roofing. For all your roofing, gutter, or siding needs, call Newman Roofing today at 614-NEW-ROOF or visit online at newmanroofing.com.
All right, number one for me. So last night we had a guys' night with the boys, went out and got some Mexican, and then came home and we're looking for something to do. And they're like, the boys are like, hey, Dad, let's watch a movie. And they wanted to watch, they're all into the Avengers because of the Spider-Man movie that dropped. And as we were going through it, you can go to Disney Plus in the app and you can watch it like via the Avengers saga in order, via the Avengers movies in the order that they were released, via the Avengers movies in terms of chronologically how you should watch them to make it all make sense. And we ended up watching the original Avengers, which is great, with Loki and the attack and all that stuff. So we ended up watching that one. And I think we watched them all during COVID, maybe in order, if memory serves. But I was sitting there watching, I was thinking, like, is this the greatest, best planned series of entertainment ever? It feels like they crushed all of the casting of all of the characters. Pretty much all of the movies are great. There's not one that's like a total dud in that original Avengers arc. Now I know that they've struggled with some of the stuff post, but all the way through Endgame, from Iron Man to Endgame, they pretty much crushed it about as good as you can. One of the just really incredible achievements in entertainment.
Yeah, so I'll piggyback off of that because the Blue Jackets announced some of their theme nights and special ticket packages for this upcoming season that opens Thursday, October 1st. On December 19th, so I think that's a day after the newest Avengers comes out, they're going to have a Marvel night at Nationwide Arena. Jet Greaves bobblehead is going to be the giveaway. This bobblehead has a removable Doctor Doom mask on it. And I wonder to myself, like, is that the best bobblehead since the Houston defensive end on a horse?
Oh, I have that one.
Ed Oliver is the player's name. I do not have that. That was a year prior to me getting the vote.
Yeah, I do have Ed Oliver on a horse from a Heisman. It was a Heisman payola.
And then I'm just reminded that Baker may or may not have purchased a talking Kurt Cignetti bobblehead.
Well, they're on the way. This should be delivered in September.
Bobbleheads are the best. There's the one, best giveaways.
One for me and one for Bo. So,
jeez.
I saw this.
I'll be damned if that's showing up on the set.
I saw this morning that the University of Cincinnati is inducting Jason Kelce into their school's Hall of Fame. Walk-on linebacker to maybe the best center on the planet at one time. Pretty good career for him. I saw Russell Brown tweeted this. Someone should let Jaden Daniels know that the Bearcats had a number 60 on their roster every year since 2011, except for five seasons.
Jeez. Number two for me, Trey Wallace with Outkick with this. A look at college football tickets for the opening month of the season. The most expensive ticket is not Ohio State at Texas. That is number two. At the cheapest get-in gate as it stands right now at $575. The most expensive is, you guessed it, LSU at Ole Miss, $595. That thing is going to be absolutely nuts. By the way, I just found out that Kiffin's daughter still goes to Ole Miss. Talk about awkward.
Yeah.
And her boyfriend's at
He's the linebacker
for her dad. Best defensive player.
Yeah.
I'm seeing this about an hour ago from Muirfield miscreant and Blue Jackets reporter Dave Metzold. He's got a microphone in front of Zach Werenski, who just had a workout at Nationwide Arena. His first public comments, I think, in person since the scuttlebutt of, 2 months ago, says he's glad to be back in town, and it reinforced the feeling that Columbus is where he wants to be. And to that, Dave, I add, for now.
All right, who asked him if he's signing an extension next August or July 31st?
That's the question there, yeah.
Who asked him that question? I want to know the answer. Second thing for me, don't go anywhere. It's a on-the-money version of Rothman and Ice, even down to the producer. It's Dave Biddle. It's Scotty Vegas. It's Isaiah Jacob. All of them coming in today. Maybe we'll get some Scotty Doesn't Know. Who knows?
Oh, everybody wins with Scotty Doesn't Know, and we got to make sure they get their full time. So we're out of here after 2. We're back tomorrow. Bishop and Friends right here on the